Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
So, Eric, is this more like it for AEW Dynamite? Two highly competitive matches bookending the show with high stakes. Hangman Page and Swerve Strickland going to a 30-minute draw with the world title shot at Samoa Joe at Revolution at stake. And then the legendary Sting and Darby defeating Ricky Starks and Big Bill to capture the tag team titles in about 14 minutes with a brawl that went all over the arena, included a Sting leap off the stands onto a crowd below, a table spot, big spots at ringside, and eventually Sting getting a clean win over Ricky Starks to win as they announced his 25th championship in his career. What'd you think of, in particular, the bookended matches on the show?
I thought this was the best Dynamite of the year, the best Dynamite in quite some time. Can't recall how long, because end of 23 is just a blur with MJF's nonsense, and then he was injured for a while before he lost the title. So yeah, it was great. You had the two matches you pointed out that where the outcome was in doubt. I don't think Jericho Takeshita was a slam dunk who was going to win. I mean, I figured Takeshita would go over, but Jericho's a big enough star that created some doubt. And then you had a really fun six-man tag that was very well worked with the Luchadors and the Blackpool Combat Club. So,
and even Tony Storm. And Red Velvet.
Tony Storm and Red Velvet did wrestle, yes.
It wasn't that bad, was it?
You knew who was going to win, though.
Oh, well, so, fair enough, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a setup match with Perrazzo at ringside. I mean, but yeah, you didn't have the mystery, and that is has been an issue with them lately, for sure.
And you ended with a really super heat angle that you wouldn't have expected from the Young Bucks in AEW and their first four or five years in the promotion, just not their kind of thing for that hardcore beatdown thing.
Yeah.
And so heading into Revolution, which we've got three more Dynamites and four more collisions before that, the top of the card looks like it's set, and AEW seems to be back on track after a 2023 that I didn't always enjoy.
Yes, this felt like Tony Khan kind of waking up from a funk, AEW waking up a bit from a funk, and they've still got to tell stories and be consistent. One Wednesday doesn't define the whole year, but this, I think, is the type of show AEW, if they produce it, regardless of the type of social media buzz and successful ticket sales week after week and TV ratings and all that WWE is doing, if AEW just kind of what they do well, what they can do best, and put out this type of show, as you said, I think that they're going to please their fan base. And I think at their peak or near their peak, the AEW fan base is a sustainable fan base for a eventual profitable company. And in theory, you would be able to build an audience on that. I specifically speaking, Hangman and Swerve, and I've been talking about this in the lead up to the match on different podcasts. It's a match that's a good test for whether these two cannot just have like an epic match, because we know they can. I mean, there's so many wrestlers in AEW can have epic matches. The challenge with AEW is, can they expand beyond the people who define a good feud based on one good match or two good matches, or define a show as being good because there's good matches on it? And that has not always been a given in pro wrestling, Eric. You and I have suffered through a lot of eras where, there were like four-star matches in a year to choose between for match of the year. And we're in a different era now. But what we saw, I think, with Swerve and Hangman tonight was a test of, do they look the part of being two people that you would look forward to, anticipate, and believe are pay-per-view main eventers who could and maybe ought to win the AEW world title going into the match with Samoa Joe. So since they had the time limit draw, now they're both going to be in the match. Did Swerve and Hangman show you something? And when I say Hangman, he's been there before. This is a new Hangman. It's a little intense, more of an edge. And Swerve really hasn't been there before. Certainly hasn't had an extended time being a babyface top singles act. And that's basically what the fans are forcing. And we saw some adjustments tonight in terms of how that goes. So did this match, where were you going into this match? And how do you feel about the 2024 Hangman and the singles babyface de facto, thanks to the fan reactions, Swerve tonight?
It sure as heck looked to me like they did a double heel turn tonight, or at least went part of the way, a lot of the way toward it. And that was, you know, it was in part because of, noted the, loud, baby face Swerve reaction in the booing of Hangman, which, you know, they foreshadowed Swerve last week talking about Black History Month and you better not interfere, Prince Nana, and, you know, I want to beat this guy so he doesn't have any more excuses, which are all things a heel about to become a baby face would say. And then Hangman, the mustache, doing a lot of the heavy lifting up to this point in telegraphing his heel turn. But I, you know, he certainly, when you have a time limit draw on TV, it's usually the babyface who asks for the extra 5 minutes, right? And Hangman was the one who denied him the extra 5 minutes. And, I mean, that's a very heelish thing to do. There was one thing I didn't understand, and I've yet to get anyone reaching out online who could explain it to me. So Hangman saying you don't get to be the number one contender because you didn't beat me. Well, Swerve was ranked number one going into the match, right? Based on the fact that he was 2-0 against Hangman. They were both 4-0 for the year, but Swerve won the two October and November matchups head to head. So, okay, well, Swerve doesn't get to be the number one contender. Well, neither does Hangman by that. I guess the explanation, the best I can tell, is that Hangman just wants to deny Swerve the thing that he wants as a way to get revenge. But it didn't make a lot of sense to me in the moment. Did you have a better explanation than that?
No. No, and I believe that Hangman, or excuse me, Swerve was ranked in AEW's rankings. You broke up a little bit, so I don't know if you covered this. I heard most of what you said. But isn't Paige behind Swerve in the rankings? Because Swerve is number one and Paige number two. So, I don't know if this is an attention to detail issue that AEW screwed up, or if it's something Hangman we're supposed to think is a heel move. But I don't really understand the foundation of Hangman going, you had to beat me to become number one, to get the title shot. I don't remember that being a stip. It goes against the rankings. It goes against their record against each other. So I agree. I think that's something that they need to clear up.
Plus Hangman was losing at the bell, right? It's the baby face typically who you set it up when you're doing a 30, you know, whatever draw, the baby face is about to get the pin at the, and the bell rings, right? That's what happens to the baby face. He's thwarted. He doesn't get the title, right?
Exactly.
In this case, the title shot. So, all three of those things, indicators of Hangman heel and Swerve baby face.
And I mean, it seems like this is where they've been heading. I mean, Hangman has the thick beard and the attitude. I mean, they awkwardly have to sort of not talk about Swerve invading Hangman's home back when they were pretty set on Hangman being a heel Swerve being a heel and Hangman being the babyface in this. So, you know, that we sort of have to move on from. I think, and I know the announcers mentioned it, I think last week, in alluded to, you know, Swerve's done some pretty heinous extreme acts to try to get Hangman's attention or something. They tried to frame it in a little bit more of a neutral way. That I'm very much paraphrasing loosely there, but I don't think they brought it up tonight, and it seems like they're really moving forward with, again, that framing of Swerve is popular and there's no reason to dislike him. But Hangman, they haven't turned against on commentary. So they're still en route to him being full-fledged heel, but you hit all the points that clearly this is being booked to frame him that way. And the fans from the beginning were chanting for Swerve and booing Hangman. I mean, a few minutes into the match, the boos for Hangman were strong. So I don't think they have a choice but to go that direction. But the good news is I think they've conceded that's the direction they have to go in for a while. I think it won't really fully – well, I mean, we have enough weeks left. They could actually have Hangman cutting full-fledged heel anti-fan promos by the time we get to the final week before the show. the pay-per-view. They could also wait for the pay-per-view for the full-fledged turn. And, I mean, you can make it work either way, but there's quite a bit of time between now and then. So my thinking is, Eric, they'll probably go full-on Swerve face Hangman heel before then. And yet Prince Nana, who was inspiring Swerve by doing the dance around him, but not interfering on his behalf in the way he did in the past. So it seems like they're even trying to figure out how can we use Nana as sort of a baby face mascot cheerleader, I don't know, a life coach, not life coach, but coach at ringside to justify him still being tied to Swerve. So yeah, your thoughts on all that.
Not a lot of successful babyface managers in the history of wrestling, just because of the nature of what a manager's role tends to be in a match.
But not all of them, very few danced as adorably as Nana does. So he's got that going for him.
True. I think Hangman is all set up to do a You People promo. You people cheered this man, and he came and invaded my house and messed with my baby, and, you know, my wife is still freaked out, and we had to get a security system. You know, I mean, he's got the You People promo all set up there if he wants to do the You People promo.
By the way, should he do that, or should they just move on? Because, one, it was a terrible idea to do that skit, I would argue. I mean, I just don't like that kind of approach to wrestling. It's so fake. Or, you know, so out of the bounds of the normal narrative structure of things. But secondly, why remind people that Swerve did that? Why try to finesse it? Just sometimes I just think you sort of go, let's just not talk about that. We're moving on.
Put it in the rearview mirror and try and make people forget it ever happened and just have Hangman beat him down in a savage attack, you know, not unlike what the Bucks did tonight to, you know, cement the heel turn and build the, build the heat for the three-way that they have.
Yeah. Yeah. But you were saying when I jumped into that question, I don't know if you finished your thought.
Mm-hmm. I'm done.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool. So let's pause and introduce the show formally here, and then we'll talk more about the main event match and also, of course, take phone calls and emails as they come in. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, February 7th, 2023. 2024? My gosh, I've done so well. Wednesday, February 7th, 2024, and this is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show following AEW Dynamite. And we are here to talk with you about everything that happened on the show, not just those bookend matches, but also everything in between, including Tony Khan's big announcement. I am Wade Keller, host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and the website pwtorch.com, and host of various podcasts throughout the week, many of them free. Just search Wade Keller in your podcast app for the Wade Keller Podcast and Post Shows. Red logo and blue logo gets you all of them, including yesterday's flagship with Jason Powell, where we went in-depth on the Rock situation in WWE and Cody and Seth and Roman Reigns. Really a fascinating situation right now. And Jason and I talked about that for well over an hour, but we also talked AEW and more, including the end of the Vince McMahon era as a force behind the scenes in on-camera pro wrestling. Meanwhile, you can also search, while you're searching Wade Keller, if you haven't subscribed yet, search PW Torch and subscribe to the free PW Torch Daily Cast. That includes last night's PWT Talks NXT post show. And there's a different show every day of the week with different hosts and different themes, and that is also free. I also host VIP podcasts, and you can get information on our VIP lineup and subscribe through various means like Patreon, your Apple account, and credit card, debit card, and PayPal through our main website. Full details at pwtorch.com/govip. The other voice you hear is Eric Kroll, a one-time Pro Wrestling Torch paper copy columnist going on 25 years ago, and now contributes here on the post shows and various podcasts and some guest articles for PW Torch. Eric Kroll, welcome back to the co-host chair.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Good to have you here to analyze this big show. Our number, if you want to be part of the conversation, is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That will flag you on the switchboard so that we know that you want to be on the show. You can also participate by emailing wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. And that way, if you can't listen live or don't have time to call in after the show, you can still be part of it and listen later to see if we read your email and respond to it during the show. All right. Eric, before we get to calls, just thoughts on Sting and Darby winning the tag team titles over Big Bill and Ricky Starks. They brawled all over the arena. Like I said, we got the sort of obligatory big dive from Sting onto a crowd. A lot of back and forth action. And in the end, Sting celebrating with the title before the Young Bucks attacked him, setting aside the post-match angle. What do you think of the match and the way that Sting and Darby won?
I mean, I think everybody saw the result of this match coming from 600 miles away, right? Sting and Darby clearly going to win to put more stakes on Sting's final match at Revolution on March 3rd. But just because the match was sort of obvious, the finish was obvious, doesn't mean they didn't put their own artistic flourishes here. Big Bill, the MVP of the match, because he caught Sting coming off of that, diving from the balcony and, the entranceway, the exit way. And if he didn't catch Sting, we wouldn't have a retirement match on March 3rd in a sold out Greensboro.
We'd have a ceremony, but I'm not sure what kind.
Yeah, it would be a different nature. So, you know, and then Bill follows it up by catching Darby and giving him this incredible spinning big
boss man slam. Yeah.
Just incredible. Darby, you know, they played to Darby's strengths, which is selling, right? The Darby natural baby face in peril due to his size. Time-honored, you know, thing in wrestling dating back to, when I started watching Ricky Morton, right, Rock and Roll Express tag team, he gets beaten down for setting up a hot tag. The cover, taking the turnbuckle cover off that Starks did when Sting did the Stinger Splash was a really good creative spot, right? It made you think for a half second, oh, my God, maybe they're going to win by cheating. Because that literally has been a finish in AEW match before. I think the Miro Eddie Kingston match maybe on a pay-per-view a couple years ago. And then to me, the real good grace note here was Ricky being reluctant to spear Sting. Like he's this heel and even he holds Sting in such high regard. You know, it's obviously inspired by the Shawn Michaels, Ric Flair super kick spot at the one WrestleMania.
Yeah.
But, you know, not so much that you thought it was a ripoff, but it was just more of a, you know, grace note hat tip thing. And, you know, I was pumped when Sting caught him and hit the Scorpion Death Drop to win, right? You know, the match was, if the buildup to it was, you know, at least they gave you a couple of weeks to think about it. The buildup wasn't like great or anything, but it didn't have to be in the end because they executed the match well, probably draws a decent rating for AEW on a week they could use it because the pro wrestling world's been focused on Cody, Rock, Roman, Paul Levesque for days now. And so shot in the arm for AEW, and they've got, you know, four matches, I think, already announced for a pay-per-view that's still 3.5 weeks away, which is not something they've always done in recent times.
I think Shivani genuinely had chills and tingles when he was like, history is made, announcing the victory, Sting's victory after the Scorpion Death Drop for the win. And then Taz, I enjoyed his commentary, which is Sting is fixing to retire, you know, kind of bringing up like he's winning a tag titles, but if he's fixing to retire, what are we going to do about this? And I guess in a way that sort of foreshadowed the Bucks attacking him and setting up the pay-per-view match. And so now the question is, and we don't need to get into it tonight, but, you know, will Sting and Darby retire as tag champs? Or will the Bucks ruin Sting's final match? Or at least the fans' night wanting to celebrate with Sting retiring as champion. Do you have a quick prediction now? And we've got, you know, like you said, weeks of storytelling to go that might give us some reason to change our mind on it. But do you think Sting and Darby should retire as champs and then have a tournament afterwards? Or do you just put the Bucks over and have them be ultra heels for ruining Sting's retirement match and Sting puts over the Bucks on his way out?
So I think, you know, I think it's up to Sting maybe, right? I would imagine Tony Khan would defer to Sting and honor Sting's wishes if he wants. But with the mega heat angle they shot tonight, Sting almost has to win at Revolution to get his revenge, right?
Darby
got bloodied. He got beaten down. In wrestling, typically, you put that much heat on the heels because you know the babyfacers are going over in the end. And it would be a mighty awkward end of the pay-per-view if they lost the belts. I mean, I guess you could do something to is it announced as the main event? It sure as heck should be, because you're not going to be able to follow Sting's retirement match on a pay-per-view. But
especially with the quality opponents in the Bucks. I mean, they're going to be bumping like crazy and being obnoxious. And it's a strong match on paper. Just Darby and the Bucks sharing the ring, it's going to be really good action. And obviously Sting is still able to do things and still go. So, yeah, I am not worried about that being able to carry the main event spot. That said, Eric, I think Tony Khan likes to finish his shows with world title matches. And I will say, if you're trying to establish a new champion and swerve, or really cement Joe as your guy, and you're a little worried about people perceiving the world title challengers right now as at the level of some of his previous pay-per-view main event world title matches, MJF and those who preceded him, not ending the show with it, even with a Sting retirement as the excuse, could define it down a little bit or hurt a little bit. I just throw that out there as a little caveat where I think you could justify not ending with Sting, even though I think all said, I'd get my vote, but it does come with the negative of maybe defining down the world title slightly.
Well, if you're going to have the Bucks win, then that argues for them being in the semi-main, because I don't know how you bring the crowd back up if the last shot is the Bucks lording it over Sting, a fallen Sting, and his retirement. That is not the
right.
Everybody knows that's not the vibe you want there. So I mean, which makes me think, you know, that you main event with it and Sting Sting goes over, and you just worry about who has the tag titles come Dynamite the 3 days hence.
Yeah, yeah. All right, very good. Well, let's start taking phone calls. We've got some emails, too. WadeKellerPodcast@gmail.com and 347-215-8558 and push 1 if you want to get in line on the phone banks. We'll start with Mark, and then we'll have Larry on deck and Greg after that. Mark from Westchester, New York, thanks for being first tonight. What's on your mind about Dynamite?
Hey, guys. Good to talk to you. I really just want to talk about Cody and finishing the story, and just kidding. So I'm really
somebody
glad Eric's
AW
on here tonight.
Somebody yelled at you. Listening
live. I mean, I couldn't resist. So I'm glad Eric's here tonight, because I really, the first thing I want to talk about was Hangman T.A. and his mustache. And potential heel turn tonight. And what are your guys' thoughts on that? It really seemed like he turned heel with the complaining at the end of the match.
Yeah, Eric, you have been the, I mean, I don't know if you want to shed that reputation or anything like that, but you've been our go-to guy to assess how Hangman is doing. We did talk specifically about tonight, but broaden it out, Eric, and talk about the new look that Mark brings up. And what do you think of Hangman being potentially the top singles heel in this company, or one of the top singles heels in this company, a top, top 3-4 guy in 2024? Is that a good, believable role for him? Is he miscast? What have you thought so far of his morphing into kind of a new version of himself?
Well, we haven't seen Hangman Page play heel, main event heel or near top of the card heel on a major stage. You know, he's previously been, I guess he was a heel in New Japan as part of the Bullet Club, but he was like the 10th guy in a 12-person team there. So I'm interested to see what he does with it, right? He certainly got the intensity, right, to be a badass heel. Sometimes in wrestling these days, that gets you cheered, right? Samoa Joe, a badass heel, but he's cheered. And so I think it's an intriguing prospect. I don't think Hangman Page was stale just because he's disappeared for long periods of time during his time in AEW. They just signed him to lucrative contract renewals last summer, I think, Hangman Page. And so you want to get your best use out of him, and they have been since the start of the calendar year. And let's see how he does. I think I think you'd have to not drink beer anymore if you're Hangman, because that's a babyface move. And you would just, cut no-nonsense promos. I think he's got it in him. Seems like he's got it in him. I didn't like the start tonight just because I couldn't – an aspect of the start of the heel turn or the full-on heel turn tonight because him saying that Swerve didn't win, so he doesn't deserve to be the number one contender, doesn't get a title shot, just didn't make sense to me.
The announcer should have pushed back on that.
Yeah.
Or
Tony Khan
– there is an explanation, yeah.
Right, Tony Khan in a headset saying, you know, it's the announcer's job to try and explain – when a wrestler botches a move, they can try and cover for the wrestler. When they say something that doesn't make sense, Hangman got his bell rung, right, or something, right, something to cover for him to push back on that a little. Because I'm not sure how you explain that other than it's part of being a heel, a cowardly heel, right? Which is is it as simple as Hangman just doesn't have what it takes to beat Swerve? He's 0-2-1 against him and was about to be 0-3, except the bell bailed him out. That's okay. You want your heel to have a little bit of cowardliness in them and not be all virtuous. So I'm optimistic that it will work. And I'm not sure what you do with that main event at Revolution now,
which is good.
You could go a lot of different ways because of the three-way nature of the match. Joe has always struck me as a transitional champion. I got to say, if Hangman wins, I would think he might be a transitional champion as well, just to get them to potentially Will Ospreay winning the belt in London, right? He's about to come in.
Is that transitional if it lasts months? I mean, I guess given the length of
5 or 6 months, I guess not. That was about the length of his first run, and he didn't feel like a transitional champion in his first run. I guess
what is the
bar
heel, right?
Transitional champion?
I'd say
Iron Sheik had what 3 weeks? How much did Ivan Koloff have when he lost to beat Bruno and lost to Pedro Morales? I don't know the time frame there.
My modern day over under transitional champion would be 7 weeks.
Wow,
I think once you're at 2 months, once you're champ for 2 months, or at least defending it a few times. Like if your first defense is 2 months later, you're transitional. But if you retain the title and hold it more than 7 weeks. That'd be my starting point for a discussion, but I could be convinced to go shorter or longer. So that's kind of what my gut says. But Ospreay's probably going to be a heel, right?
I don't know that's – he's going to be a babyface in London. So,
I know that.
If you to sign Will Ospreay promised him that he would win the world title in London in front of all his friends and family at Wembley Stadium – He's the face there, and he needed a heel champion to face him. He's got at least one or two more pay per views after Revolution before you get to maybe 3 pay per views if they're going to increase the schedule this year before you get there. So plenty of time to get there. I just don't see them having Joe be champion all the way to London. So
I'm okay with that for this. I'm not saying it's like my number one vote. I want to think through and kind of see how things go for a month here, but Joe is sort of an in-between guy, and so if he goes into London and gets booed and loses to Ospreay, you're not having to recast him. But if Hangman is a heel and Ospreay is meant to be a heel post Wembley, you're setting up the build to All In as a new star who's going to be wildly cheered, winning a title, who then you have to – against a heel, who then you're expecting U.S. fans, your main market, to then boo afterwards. And that's a little awkward. I think you avoid that with Joe as champ. If you put Swerve in that situation, though, if he's champion going in – man, we're going to have ourselves here. But if Swerve is a champion going into that, then you're going to have Swerve, your red-hot new babyface, being booed by 70,000 people – in London, and then maybe that rallies the U.S. fans, but maybe it's awkward. I don't know if we want to do a U.S. versus U.K. type, thing where, depending on the country you're in is whether you're a face or a heel, but I don't know. Yeah, with Swerve going from a heel run to face, and then you put him in Wembley, I would want Swerve to be against a heel so that Swerve can seem like a huge babyface star at Wembley. But I don't know that I want Ospreay beating a heel going into being a top heel in the United States. So it feels like a little bit of a conundrum in terms of just using Wembley to create momentum for what you do after that.
Yeah,
and that's where Joe fits.
we'll see what Ospreay comes in as, right?
Right.
That he could come in as a heel and Don Callis' family could turn on him. I think key to however they book that main event at Revolution, we've seen Hangman and Swerve three times already, and they've given away, you know, the third match on TV. So it feels, for a promotion that almost never does a match more than once, right, sometimes to its chagrin, the fan's chagrin, you'd need something different out of this pay-per-view main event, a different result. Because if you're going to have, Hangman cost Swerve the match, does Hangman win when he does that? Does Hangman Joe? You need some sort of different results there if you're going to prolong Hangman Swerve and go, 6 months with them, right? It'll be interesting to see how they maneuver around that and don't make Joe their champion an afterthought.
So my question before I throw it back to Mark, quick answer, do you think Hangman as a heel, from what you've seen so far, is a candidate, at least, not necessarily your top pick, but a candidate to be AEW's top singles heel going even into 2025, like for the rest of the year? Do you think he has that in him based on what you've seen so far, which we stipulate to as a small sample size, and it's still a turn in motion?
Yeah, probably. And if not, no harm, no foul, because you got a whole bunch of other really talented guys on the roster who are either already there or one or, you've got Ospreay coming in for sure, and you probably have Okada coming in. So, there's not going to be any shortage of top-level people who have proven they can be heels should Hangman not work out in that role.
Yeah. All right, very good. Mark, back to you for any follow-up or a different topic.
So the next thing is, when is someone going to be like, hey, Tony, you need to stop making these announcements? Especially this one that was nothing but it said boss ton in the background. Why can't you just be we're going to have this event in Boston and we're going to debut Mercedes. Why can't you just say what is actually going to happen instead of prolonging it and stating the obvious without stating the obvious. I don't know. It's just really annoying for him to make all these announcements without actually making an announcement.
So they could have said, Tony Khan is going to have a big announcement next week about a special episode of Dynamite coming up. And it would have just stopped everyone from coming up with bigger announcements that would be more specific and more newsworthy. And that, I think, would be a better way to frame this, Eric, so people don't feel like Mark does, and I completely understand it. Our big announcement is, in 5 weeks, we're going to have a big episode of Dynamite that people are going to be talking about, and you can buy tickets for it. I mean, it's like the Wembley announcement. It's not a big announcement if you announce ticket sales for something way in the future. You can't unwrap a gift on Christmas that says, oh, wait till your birthday. We got something special planned. And that's kind of what Tony's doing here. What do you think?
I disagree. They are basically just trying to replay the CM Punk debuting in Chicago in August of 2021 thing that they did before. And the tell was exactly what Mark said. In the bottom corner of the graphic, they put an Easter egg, B-O-S-S-T-O-N, and the two S's were dollar signs. And the font and the color scheme was Mercedes Moné and Big Business. And they didn't say Mercedes Moné. They never said CM Punk in the weeks before. And yet they filled up the United Center in an Insta sellout with 15,000 people. And they never said CM Punk will be debuting in Chicago. And even though they, telegraphed it, and it would have been an epic fail had they not done that, no one would ever believe Tony Khan again. So to me, I don't have an issue with that. My question is, does Mercedes Moné, the former Sasha Banks, have the same value and cachet and ticket moving ability in Boston that CM Punk did in Chicago? Punk obviously was coming back after 7 years, so it was a bit of a much more different, much more grander scale thing. I guess if enough people have the reaction that Mark did, or enough people are complaining about it, and they're just not selling tickets, they can always go ahead and make the announcement, right, and say it's going to be Mercedes Moné. but it sure appears like they're just trying to capture lightning in a bottle twice, and I'm curious to see if they do.
The only count, well, not the only count, but the one counter is this is I think his last big announcement was, hey, everyone buy tickets to Wembley next year. So, and he has a streak of people feeling let down. I think that, and I'll let Mark speak for himself, but I think that's where Mark's coming from is, like, be more explicit or you're the boy who cried wolf, and because of the track record leading up to it. But you're right, Eric, from a context standpoint, if there wasn't a bit of a track record recently of people groaning, then they basically told you. So, Mark, with that context and my point, you know, what I've said and what Eric said, talk more about that and your feelings.
Oh, no, you're like, and what you said is correct. Like, I was there last year at UBS Arena, and there was a big Tony Khan announcement. It was the first announcement of the first All In. But, like, you know, when you're there in the arena, like, and you're not going to travel across the ocean, like, he makes these big announcements, but, like, most fans, I feel like it's not big to them. And I don't know how that, how other fans feel, but, like, I don't know. Like, when he makes these big or major announcements, it doesn't really hit everyone the same way that I think he thinks it's going to feel, because he's this super fan and he thinks it's going to just be the most amazing thing because that's how he feels.
Eric, what percentage of fans, of 800,000 people watching Dynamite on TBS, give or take, how many of them are thinking or noticing the Easter egg and saying, ah, this was a big announcement because I see what Tony did there, versus people going, oh, God, another ticket sales announcement. That's a letdown.
It's probably small, but it doesn't matter, because what happens is AEW is doing the Easter egg thing, right? So they're relying on people noticing it, blowing it up, screenshotting it, posting it on social media to both say, oh, my God, Mercedes Moné is going to debut in Boston in her hometown, and they're relying on that social media buzz and people arguing, was it a big announcement? It didn't seem like it was a big announcement to me, and then somebody replying to them with a screenshot. They're relying on that buzz to sell the tickets, and I'm curious, you know, there's a lot of Sasha stans out there who are active on social media. She's the Taylor Swift of pro wrestling on a smaller scale, and so I'm curious to see, Does that carry the day for them, or if the tickets go on sale and they sell 2,000 tickets in a 20,000 seat arena, huge basketball arena, do they have to reverse course? And I guess we'll find out. I think the on sale date is on sales. Is it soon?
Saturday 10 a.m. Saturday, okay. 10 a.m.
Yes, yep. So there's probably a pre-sale code you can get too.
Yeah, and obviously Tony lives in the world that makes him believe that social media is everything. And every potential fan who's going to buy a ticket to Boston who doesn't notice the BO $$ on the background of the big font in the foreground, that they're going to hear from their friends on social media. And maybe he's right that that'll be enough, but you can also argue that's been one of the criticisms for Tony Khan is he relies too much on that universe and sort of the cuteness of Easter eggs or sort of everyone will find out because everyone's going to be on social media in a half hour and that they'll see what other people saw. Is that fun and the right way to do it? And the audience is big enough on Twitter for that to work. Mark, what do you think?
Well, I'll say that like Eric said, that like, I didn't notice the boss ton part until I saw it online and, like, it was screenshotted and, like, it was pointed out to me. But, like, I also don't think that her showing up after 2 or 3 years gone from WWE and an injury in New Japan compares to, you know, Punk being away for 7 years and his grand return.
Oh, sure.
Like, I don't
yeah.
think it's equivalent. And, like, I don't think that it's going to get the same effect that Tony thinks it may get.
Yeah, fair enough. Eric, would you do it any differently if you wanted to maximize ticket sales, or do you think this is? I mean, it sounds like you're defending it, and I mean,
yeah,
It's not awful. It's kind of fun, you know, like decode the big message. We told you, you just got to look carefully or listen to your friends who are emailing and texting and talking to you on social media about it.
I mean, it worked for them once. I'm not as confident it'll work for them again. Always time to course correct if people aren't getting the hint. WWE has to hit people over the head with the subtlety hammer in all of their TV shows to get people, because they think their fans are dumb and they won't understand the plot twist that happens when I think fans are perfectly capable of understanding things. You don't need to treat them like idiots. It's just a new way to try and sell something in the modern wrestling era. Try to take advantage of social media, people putting up YouTube videos based off this wrestling websites, both legit and clickbaity, you know, Tony Khan drops Easter egg, right? Yeah. The Marvel Cinematic Universe, you know, lots of other things have, our pop culture is at a time where that has worked, right? The Easter egg thing
Telling
things over social media. I just wonder whether this particular product, Mercedes Moné will, you know, will she be able to carry that approach?
Fair enough. I'm
not sure about.
And I think that's what Mark was getting into, too, Sasha's, who's already appeared on AWTV, and she's, you know, dropping hints on social media. You know, it's so great to collaborate again. She's not CM Punk. Now, that said, it doesn't mean she's far off from it, or that some people, maybe a significant number, are going to see her as a bigger deal and a more welcome addition than Punk. But in the aggregate, obviously Punk being away as long as he was, that just sort of by definition is a bigger deal, just not necessarily to everyone. Mark, I'll throw it back to you for anything else you want to bring up before we move on.
The last thing is that you may have mentioned it on a previous podcast, but I'll be honest, like, it mostly happens on Collision, and I haven't watched Collision in probably a couple months just because it's been very blah. But my biggest pet peeve with AEW for the last couple months is that, like, occasionally they do this thing where they just shoot the roof and talk, have the announcers talk. And it hasn't happened on Dynamite the last couple weeks because I've been watching Dynamite, but I haven't watched Collision. And I just think that, like, if you don't have enough fans that you can't show, like, a section of the fans and make it look good, they have to shoot the roof. It's like the most stupidest thing in the world. And, like, just find, like, one group of fans that you can and shoot them instead of the ceiling of the arena. And that's my last thing. I hope you guys have a good night, and I appreciate both your work.
Thanks, Mark. I appreciate it. I wouldn't mind shooting up at the roof to do announcements, you know, for graphics. Honestly, if it didn't seem like it was because we have nowhere to aim the camera without seeing empty seats. From a production technique, I'm fine with that. It's just when you have 2,000 and change in a venue and you start pointing at the ceiling and the scoreboard, it does take on a bit of a symbolism of the fact that we don't have enough fans. Tonight they had a good audience. I mean, it was 5,000 plus according to WrestleTix. And when they opened the show, they were able to do a wider shot and light up most of the lower bowl with a wide angle as they were showing pyro. They didn't just have to zoom in on the stage and then zoom in on pockets of 2,000 fans yelling. The upper deck was completely blackened, and, you know, that was pretty obvious, but I don't know. I think when you're at 5,000 or better, you can have a major league look and light up enough fans, it works. And if they do that and the rest of the show looks that way, then I don't think aiming at the ceiling as a backdrop is anything but just sort of a production technique to shake things up. Eric, what do you think?
I think it's suboptimal to have to shoot the roof because you don't have enough people in a big building. I don't think most fans notice or care, right? If you're doing it when the point is you're supposed to be listening and not watching, right? Because it's just announcer babble. You're focusing on a different of your senses than. And I know you can do that. You can have crowds of 5,000 people in a big arena and make it look good. And how do I know that? Because WWE, before they got hot, was in a creative rut for many years before the pandemic, and your average Raw or SmackDown would get 4,000 or 5,000 people in a big arena, and you couldn't tell when you watched WWE television.
Yeah, and the thing is 5,000 is fine. I think that's, you know, you're at a point where you can make it look Major League enough. And again, I don't think people are sitting there counting the full sections or noticing the black and upper deck. It's more just a vibe you get. You know, the vibe of, does this feel high energy, Major League well lit, or does it feel gloomy and darkened? And even if they're not thinking why, it just changes the sense of how big of stars the wrestlers are. And does it have a big time high energy feel? And it's those, everything just sort of adds up. I think 5,000 is a threshold, and you want to consistently get above that. And if you're consistently below it, I think that's a problem that pulls down the star power of your fans and the vibe of the show. And I think tonight was different in a good way than in recent weeks. And certainly Boston has a chance to be, you know, get us back to those early Dynamites where, remember early on, Eric, for months, we were like, I don't care who AEW's wrestlers are, the star of the show are these crowds. Because it was such a contrast back then to WWE. The enthusiasm, the passion was so different. The energy level was so much better than the kind of family, the families just there to see the stars pop for the entrance, but it just wasn't a hot product of WWE at that time. And AEW, if they can get back to that, and you know, there might be just 2, 3, 4 months of good booking decisions away, or maybe Collision hampers it enough because they're spread so thin in terms of ticket sales and storylines and star power. Maybe it's going to be harder to do, but I think some good decisions and some good signings, they can get back to where they're hitting that threshold. And then you kind of get to that tipping point where anybody who's getting a big crowd reaction from 5,000, 6,000 people in these venues starts to feel like a star. But when it's a darkened arena, it's hard to get new stars over. Eric.
The only thing I'll say is when AEW started, they would draw 5,000 to 6,000 people at sold out Dynamites, but they were running buildings that were smaller, like secondary buildings in the market, as opposed to now they're running more big hockey NBA arenas. And so 5,000 at the United Center or Target Center still has issues as opposed to 5,000 in a smaller venue that's, you know, where it's packed and you don't have to worry about, you could show all the crowd because it doesn't matter. So it's just a slight difference. 5,000 people in a building that holds 5,000 is going to sound better, even if it doesn't look quite as magnificent. Whereas 5,000 in a basketball arena where you can't show most of it, you know, as you noted, the upper deck, you know, presents some challenges, I think.
Yeah. All right. We'll go to Larry in Beardstown and then Greg in Waterloo is on deck. Larry, thanks for calling. Good to talk to you again. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Sounds like you and the previous caller have touched on a lot of the things I wanted to bring up. You just brought up the crowd, and my comment on that is there was a real difference in the energy level from the people in the ring to the crowd itself. It made a big difference on the show. I mean, that's just an opinion I have. But that being said, they have that tonight, but from what I just saw before I called in on WrestleTix, it looks like they may have barely pushed about 1,600 tickets out for the Collision out in Vegas this weekend.
True. Yeah, that's been a real – it was under 1,000 for the longest time. Vegas is where the Super Bowl is going on this year, and, mm-hmm. and Henderson's mm-hmm. right outside Vegas. You would think you might get, just odds are some Super Bowl attendees are also wrestling fans and AEW fans. You might get a few of those, but so far it hasn't been the case. And they're not doing the last minute ticket markdowns like they have been. So before they would get, you know, 1,000 people in the last 2 days, and now, you know, buying $20 tickets, and they're not doing that since the new ticket guy took over.
And I think it depends on the market. I mean, you can just depends on what kind of town you're running in and what population you're drawing from and what the socioeconomic demographics tell you. I mean, I think they can cater it market for market in that way. I mean, they've got 15,000 plus sold for Greensboro for AEW Revolution. They're going to do good. They're going to do really well in Boston. They're, you know, so obviously tens of thousands for Wembley, and they're going to build on that. They can here and there get big crowds. But yeah, it's Collision. If it's just continues to be this dark, damn. Yeah, it's just you don't want that mood, and Saturdays give off that vibe. I mean, WrestleTix has like an Ottawa coming up on March 16th, getting way ahead. They got ways to go, but they're set up for 3,100, and they've only sold 2,100 so far, but they got a month to go. Those are the ones that are going to kind of pull them down in terms of the perception of it being a hot product. And that is so important. That perception of being a hot product is key. And yeah, I mean, the Henderson, Nevada show, I mean, to only be set up for 2,000 and to not even have that sold out yet is rough. So yeah, I mean, it's an ongoing thing. And part of it is just when you add Collision to the mix, you're doubling the number of shows that you have to make look good for TV. And I've been hitting that bell for a while. Go ahead, Larry. Anything else?
How much fun, I think I brought this up last week, how much fun is Toni Storm having right now?
A lot. She loves this gimmick, and she's clearly into it, and so is Toni. Eric, what do you think? Where are you on her now?
I've not been high on this for a while now. It's kind of a Johnny One-Note act. Tonight, I could almost squint and be okay with it because it's different if she drops the shtick when she's in the ring, and tonight she did, right?
Yeah.
And so that to me, like, oh, this match versus Red Velvet isn't going to be a total train wreck. It's not going to be terrible. She's not going to be doing stupid shtick. So that's fine. You know, the match was good, which you can't always say about AEW women's matches. Deonna Purrazzo was a zero on commentary, just added nothing, just not, I don't know if she wasn't set up enough by the announcers, but, you know, they did a sort of basic post-match angle to further build the Revolution match, but I don't think Deonna Purrazzo is exactly lighting the world on fire so far in AEW.
One thing that Purrazzo said on commentary when prompted by the announcers is, do you know her well? Who is this? Did you see this delusional change in personality coming? And Purrazzo said, she is delusional, and it's shocking. I don't even know who this person is. She's a stranger to me. And I think that's important to frame Toni Storm in a way, which is that she's delusional. But I am craving them to build on that and give us more. Like, I thought, again, point, they get points for just doing that because I think you want to hit that point that she's delusional and an old friend who knew her well doesn't even recognize her anymore. But what's the next layer? Like, yeah, I want the announcer to go, is she delusional or is this an act to get in people's heads? That was the story with Goldust back in the day. Oh, he's not really this and that. He's just doing this and that to get in the head of the opponents. And he knows what he's doing. I want that discussion, and I think they should have it, and I think they should know the answer themselves of how they want it to be. But is Toni Storm in on it, or did she, you know, hit her head one day and get confused or get too wrapped up in watching old movies in a dark room during a stretch of time and morphed into something? Like, I just don't know if Toni Storm knows. I don't know if Toni Khan knows. And I think if they do know the answer to that type of question and flesh this character out more, you can have more of a discussion about it. And Purrazzo is a perfect candidate to do that. And they just didn't go deep enough into it. I want the announcer to go, do you think what is she like now outside the ring? We don't even know. Does she just walk in an arena and turn into this? Is this an act? Or is she like this when she, you know, goes to the drugstore to buy hair product? And I just want them to give us more layering on this. Larry, what do you think?
I can't disagree with anything you're saying. I will add something, though. When they do finally have the match with Toni and Purrazzo, and I'm saying this in complete seriousness, I think they should get Wendy Richter to be in Purrazzo's corner. And I'm dead serious when I say that.
And why?
If you remember the press conference where she made the comments about Wendy Richter, I think that would be an amusing play on that, or at least for the fans that can remember it.
Yep, gotcha. Yep.
Yeah, I'm an old wrestling fan. I think funny.
No, that's good. It's a good callback. Eric, anything else you want to add on this?
I guess I'm eager for them to move past this current feud and to, you know, I know it's going to be a slow burn, the sort of All About Eve storyline with Mariah May, but I think they need to start building up Mariah May a little bit more so that when there's the eventual split, Mariah's, you know, got a few more wins under her belt, and she's not just, you know, the second valet to Toni Storm behind Luther, right? For that split to,
right.
You know, and I think there's potential in that split for that to mean as much as they want. They got to work on the other half of that that person there.
Larry, anything else you want to bring up?
No, I think that'll be about it. You two have done a really, and the first caller have done a really good job on hitting on some good key points about AEW's show and some of the things that are going on. I'll just hang up, let you guys get some other callers, keep listening, and so long from the land of Lincoln.
Thanks, I appreciate it. All right, let's see here. Oops. Let's go now to Greg in Waterloo. Greg, thanks for calling. Thanks for holding. What's on your mind about Dynamite?
Hello. I guess I'll just start with a couple general statements when I want to get into the conversation of the big business show, but coming in 5 weeks. But I'll just say I thought that this had the feel very much of a show that the core AEW fan base would really like. I mean, I thought that this was very much right up the alley, just the core fan base with the great, great 30-minute opening match followed by the, you know, the six-man tag. And I mean, I just thought it was very much a show that this was what AEW does best as far as like the in-ring presentation tonight. I thought like it was a very solid show from that. And I mean, they've been having a lot of shows like that, but mainly on Saturdays on Collision. But this was it felt like what AEW does best on an episode of Dynamite, with way more people watching than watch on Saturday nights. So, and then I'll also say that I subjectively do not care to see Ricky Starks be pinned by Sting to build up the Young Bucks, but that's a subjective opinion, and if it's what Sting wants on the way going out, then, you know, that's his call, so I won't argue with him too much on that. Now, on the topic of this show coming up in 5 weeks, you know, I've talked about Mercedes on here before because I'm a big fan of hers, and I'm also an AEW fan, and so I've got a lot of opinions on this, but I mean, I am, you know, we've talked about the women's division and the presentation is still lacking there, even though there's more time given to matches and more time given to people on TV. So, I mean, it is very interesting that he is basically with all the subtlety of being hit over the head with a ton of bricks is promoting, you know, Mercedes for Austin 5 weeks out is one of the biggest shows in AEW history. So it's very interesting that a female star is getting this kind of promotion going into the show. And so I guess for me as a big fan of hers, I have mixed feelings on this because I'm very much looking forward to it. But then also there's the question of Mark's presentation and how things are presented. So it's going to be a very interesting timeline, I have to say. And last thing I'll say is on the subjective side of things, like, you know, we had the CM Punk event in Chicago, the first dance, and it's going to be, I don't know, I'm going to be interested to see how they sell an NBA-sized arena for somebody who really is not overly synonymous with Boston in the way that CM Punk is Chicago. And then I don't want to get into argument about, like, star power or anything, but I feel like it's going to be very interesting to see how that show goes, and I'm interested to see if they try to stack that show up overall in general to really try to get some buzz and feel around it, because, you know, to announce it 5 weeks out and say this is one of the biggest shows in the history of the company, I mean, that's a lot of hype.
It is, and it's, if they can deliver on it, it's the right way to build up a big show in 5 weeks. Eric, is Sasha Banks, the former Sasha Banks, enough for that? Do they need more? Okada, something else? Is that where, you know, Kenny makes his first appearance in a while, or MJF makes his return to TV? Like, do you stack it up as sort of this almost hard reset? I don't know if that's the right term, but, you know, turning things on blast. Do you bring a lot of things together, or do you just make this about Mercedes Moné and her debut? She's not CM Punk Chicago, but she's not associated in people's minds with Boston. How do you think she will do in terms of star power if they lean on her hard?
Yeah, the thing I'm a little in the dark on is, you know, the Sasha stands, the people who swarm the Sasha naysayers on social media. So for CM Punk, his fans were Gen Xers, older, you know, geriatric millennials who remembered him and had their own disposable income and could drive or fly to Chicago on the merest hint that CM Punk would appear. Are the Sasha stands, do they tend to be teenage girls who you know, would need their parents' assistance to travel to Boston on a school night in March. I don't know the answers. I mean, just in terms of, like, you know, selling tickets, that's why I bring it up. That is the big question. Is Sasha Banks, Mercedes Moné enough to sell out that arena? For CM Punk debuted on a Rampage, of all places. It was the second Rampage ever. And so it was only an hour show, and I don't think they teased anything for it, right, other than the hints they were broadly dropping about CM Punk coming out. And his opening promo took up like a third of the hour, I think, between all of the talking and the victory laps and interacting with the fans. So it's not a great comparison. You're doing a two-hour Dynamite show. You probably need to have more matches. But I think whether it draws or not is probably going to be solely based on how, you know, your mileage on Sasha Banks, Mercedes Moné. They're not going to have a problem with people knowing that that's what the plan is.
Right, of course not.
I'm looking at the headlines already. Wrestling Observer, Figure Four Online, AW, big business set for Boston, Mercedes Moné debut expected. PW Insider does the old Tony Khan's big announcement is ... to get you to click. But the second paragraph is the graphic is listed as taking place in Boston with the double S dollar signs. Obviously a reference to the soon to be debuting Mercedes Moné, and you know, Fightful Select put theirs up behind a paywall, details on Mercedes Moné, AEW, AEW big business. So there, you know, wrestling fans these days, I think by and large in the internet era, tend to keep up with the headlines, right? Those who are watching Raw and Dynamite every week, you know, there's the casual fan, which may even be a myth at this point. You know, are they going to know? They're probably going to hear about it somewhere. And so we'll see how that plays out. I don't think it'll be a matter of – the question isn't, are fans going to know about it? It's a question of just is she a big enough draw on her own to sell, let's say, 10,000 tickets to Fleet Center? I don't know what it's called these days in Boston.
Isn't it the TD Ameritrade Center?
Yeah.
All right, Greg, back to you.
Yeah, I just think this is going to be a most interesting timeline for a number of reasons, and it's going to, you know, I do think this is going to be the catalyst, especially with Tony Khan basically celebrating the exit of the Stardom founder on X the other night. I do think this is going to be the catalyst to really open up, you know, that forbidden door to, you know, to some of the top women's talent around the world, using the name Mercedes, using her and bringing her in. I think there will be, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of matches she'd like to have that, you know, that I think Tony Khan would be open to if he's able to really get that going, which I think this will be the catalyst for that. But then at the same time, I'm also interested to see, because as we've been talking about for weeks on here, the presentation's improved, but as far as, like, you know, more time given, but there's still the question of, like, the presentation issue of the women's division and the treatment of people in the division as stars. And so, I mean, this is all going to be very interesting, because you're going to have to build people around her and not just have them on TV, but build people around her to the point to where they feel like big stars, where they feel like, you know, some of the bigger male stars on the roster. So it's going to be very interesting for a lot of reasons. And I'm sure we'll talk about this a lot more going forward, but I think that's about all I have to say. I'm just very interested to see how this goes down.
Great. Thanks, Greg. Appreciate it. AW sent out a press release, ProWrestling.net also posted about this, and their headline, AW touts the big business-themed edition of Dynamite for Boston. They said the announcement marks AW's second show at TD Garden after AW Dynamite won Guts last summer. Fans can expect more incredible moments during this historic edition of AEW Dynamite, and then they push ticket sales. Tony Khan said, Boston's a perfect home for AEW Dynamite Big Business, which will be a major moment in history of all Elite Wrestling. You all have a chance to be part of this once-in-a-lifetime moment, either by joining us live or watching on TBS. So that's their framing of it. It is, but no more hints of Mercedes in this one, in the press release. So they're counting on others to connect those dots and crack those Easter eggs. All right, next we'll go to Jay in Hartford. Jay, welcome. What's going on about Dynamite tonight?
Hey, good evening, Wade and co-host. I enjoyed the show. I'll be honest in that I thought overall the show was good. But there were a couple things that irked me just enough that there was a point when I said, never mind, I don't think I want to watch. So I know that's very contradictory, but I was annoyed with how they handled Swerve and Hangman. And Wade, I think at the very, I dialed in earlier, dropped off and called back. I think at the beginning of the call tonight or the show tonight, I heard you mention that maybe AEW was pivoting in how they were presenting Swerve and Hangman. But I was pretty annoyed at the finish of the match with the draw and Swerve as the heel, you know, as far as I can, you know, understand as best I've seen him over these last few weeks, he's the heel to me. So for him to be the one to grab the mic and say, you know, no, it shouldn't end this way. Let's go 5 more minutes. I'm thinking, well, seems like a babyface thing to do. But I'm like, okay, whatever. We'll deal with it, right? And then Hangman says, no, you had to beat me and you didn't. And I'm like, well, okay, that seems very heelish. And I'm annoyed with AEW in that they don't really give you, you know, anyone to believe in. Like, not that they don't have faces, but there's not that one guy, at least not at the main event level, that I can say, like, you know, this is our guy. Like, MJF, they somewhat turned him face, but to me, he's always MJF. He's always just that, you know, that guy that was playing a face, you know what I mean, even in a storyline sense. Like, you know, he just became friends with Adam Cole, and he got sucked into, you know, kind of enjoying our cheers and whatnot, but he was still MJF. It wasn't really a true, genuine babyface, if that makes sense. So when Hangman said, no, you didn't beat me, so that's it, it's over, I'm like, it just took me out of it. And then for Hangman to, you know, kind of almost throw a tantrum when Tony Schiavone made the announcement that it was going to be a triple threat or three-way dance, that I believe they called him, that made it worse. So, I talk about this a lot. I feel when I call it with the shades of gray, like WWE, I feel they're better. But, you know, they annoy me with Charlotte Flair. They have their times when I'm like, I don't know how to feel about this person. But AEW, I feel like there's just that one – they don't have that one big baby face for me to believe in. And maybe I'm spoiled with how WWE is presenting Cody right now, but it just, it's a problem for me watching Dynamite. And I'll say, forgive me for rambling, but it kind of ties in right when we got to the Blackpool Combat Club. Same thing. I've always had a problem with how they present them, even though Daniel Bryan is my favorite ever. I just don't know if he's a heel or a face. I thought he was going to be heel. Then tonight he, or actually I just caught up watching recent Collision episodes and Dynamite. I was like 2 weeks behind, and he shook the hand of, I'm going to say it was Yuji Nagata, I believe, that he faced, but I'm like, he's shaking hands now. I'm just so confused, and I just need you, Wade, I don't know if you guys covered it, to explain to me the purpose of the low blow in that 6-man tag with the Blackpool Combat Club. Like, I'm thinking, okay, they're the heels, but are we supposed to be sympathetic to them when the CMLL guys came in after the match too? So the face heel dynamic in AEW, it really just, it makes it painful. And I almost said, I'm done with this show, but I'm glad I stayed tuned in because the main event was pretty good. So if you haven't, maybe you guys can just get some input on that.
So Eric, right now, if we look at AEW's babyface depth chart, you have Orange Cassidy, Eddie Kingston, Adam Copeland, Chris Jericho, Darby Allin, Sting. You have whatever the Blackpool Combat Club is, somewhere in a third, another category. And maybe Swerve Strickland now. What do you think about the dynamic there? Yeah.
There's two different things here. Yeah. Jay is absolutely correct when he says AEW throughout most of its tenure has lacked a top babyface, right? They had two babyface champions. They had
Hangman.
Mox was the first one, right?
Yeah.
And Mox has always been more of a shades of gray guy. He leans babyface, he leans heel, right, depending on what the situation is called for. He was a babyface during his title run, but it happened during the pandemic, and you know, you didn't really have fan reactions, and Mox is not the stereotypical cuddly babyface. And then you had Hangman, whose tenure, you know, features some good matches, a good feud with Bryan Danielson, but, you know, probably didn't hit the heights they were hoping for, I think we can safely say. So it is true that over time, AEW has lacked a top babyface. Tonight, though, was pretty simple to me. It was a double turn. Now, if this would have happened tonight in WWE, you would have Michael Cole screaming like a loon, "Oh my God, Hangman Page is so heelish. Heel, 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 look at that heel. Oh my God, Swerve is a great babyface. Babyface, babyface, babyface," because everything has to be hammered over the head for WWE and their fans, or so they think. I give WWE fans more credit than that. But it certainly is a stylistic difference between the two promotions. WWE, you know, leaves little doubt about where things are. I think... because it was if they had built up the double turn a few weeks more, and then, you know, it became a little more obvious that's what they were doing, but they didn't do that. It wasn't like a clean break tonight. It was these two. It was these two in the middle of that double face turn. With Swerve, they started it really during the Continental Classic. He was mostly cheered, and then last week he gave a babyface promo about Black History Month, and Hangman has slowly been getting more aggressive and more heelish and more mustachey during the course of January in 2024. So that one seemed to be pretty simple. You asked why the Blackpool Combat Club did the low blow tonight. I was thinking about that, and I think they did the low blow to win because in Lucha Libre, the heels do the low blow to win, and that was totally probably to build up for a return match in CMLL where the AEW wrestlers would be the heels and the CMLL wrestlers would be the baby faces, which I could see why that would be confusing if you didn't know that, and probably not, you know, not as clean of storytelling as you might like. So I get that. I get that question. It's a good question.
Yeah, and even if you know it, it doesn't fit the narrative of Dynamite unless you go with the notion that Blackpool Combat Club are still heels. I mean, they're just they lead their tactic, despite being wildly popular with AEW fans, who, and they're not going to boo them. They are their tendencies, their actions, their attitude, their facial expressions, Danielson, Claudio, they all, I mean, less so Moxley, but they're, I don't know. I mean, they're just, they're I get where Jay's coming from, you know, like you want to just have a reason to root for people. And it's like the term babyface doesn't mean smiling, handing a gift to a little kid at ringside and being a do-gooder. Babyface just means fans like you and you're not booked to make them feel foolish for liking you. And you tend to win by either following the rules more than your opponents or fighting fire with fire when you're retaliating against such tactics. And that's not what the Blackpool Comic Club are. They're in some weird third category that I think does mitigate what could be a passionate crowd, a passionate AEW fan base really rooting for them. And also, what defines the baby faces, you mainly face heels. And then you tell the story in a way where you know, you are rewarding and encouraging fans to cheer them because the wrestlers are acting in a way that the fans like, as opposed to a way that confuses the fans who like you. And Blackpool Comic Club are all over the place, and it's, I don't think it's been good. And I think Jay, I think you are sort of expressing the mitigation and the resulting ambivalence. Reluctant, sad ambivalence that people feel towards characters who are framed as heels or portray themselves as heels when everybody just likes them. And thankfully they're correcting course on Swerve Strickland, or I don't know, correcting course, but they're going with the fans. They're leaning into it, not fighting the headwind. But yeah, I mean, I think AEW would be better off if Danielson and Moxley and Claudio simplified things and just were, you know, badasses who represent AEW and they fight heels and they don't do things to try to antagonize fans or do low blows due to some storyline that has nothing to do with AEW's business model right now or fans enjoyment of AEW on PBS and TNT. Eric, I hear you inhaling. What would you like?
I'll say two things. One,
yes.
There is more than one way to tell a story in professional wrestling. And I know everybody's WWE brained because it's been the only major promotion up until 4 years ago for 20 years. So there are other ways to do things. That said, I think the easiest explanation for why the Blackpool Combat Club is the way they are right now is Bryan Danielson's in his last year in AEW. He's got a bunch of dream matches and boxes he wants to check. Some of those guys that they're bringing in are faces. Some of them are heels. And Bryan Danielson leans face or leans heel depending on who he's in the ring with that particular night. And that's going to lead to some inconsistencies because there is no governing principle beyond give Bryan Danielson what he wants because he's such a legend in his final year. And I guess with the CMLL thing, it's sort of this little bit of a mini invasion that they're just doing to try right. and see where they can go with a new partnership. And maybe they can both draw a little extra money. CMLL is doing very well right now, so I'm not sure they really need – they can't pack any more fans into Arena Mexico. But, that's – to me, the Bryan Danielson is the reason things are the way they are right now, at least.
I think it would behoove AEW and perhaps you, Eric, to listen to criticism of AEW without the chip on your shoulder about WWE and imagine WWE doesn't exist and evaluate the critique, the criticism, the evaluation – on does it make sense? Does this fight the AEW fan base and human nature and human tendencies to want to, here's why I like these people, why are they acting in a way that makes me like them less? That's not next level wrestling promoting or some alternate way that people are so obsessed with WWE's way of doing things because that's all they've seen. That's not what I'm hearing. I'm hearing, and we're seeing it in numbers, we're seeing it in attendance and ratings, we're seeing fans frustrated because the stories AEW is telling isn't some really newfangled alternate to WWE. It just doesn't make sense. It's not well told. It's not fleshed out. It's inconsistent. It sends mixed signals. It goes against what AEW fans who maybe have never watched a minute to WWE in their life are left confused, flummoxed, and dismayed. So I just think it's good for people who think AEW just has to be different than WWE, and therefore anything they do that doesn't make sense or isn't well done is simply should be framed as, well, you're just too focused on WWE to see the genius. And that's how you come across when you put things that way. My criticism of AEW is not based on a WWE formula that I'm hung up on. I've seen dozens of territories, and I've never seen a territory thrive when they tell bad stories or work against fan sentiment. And that's where my criticism or critique or evaluation of things comes from, is within the AEW universe, the way that what their fan base is looking for is what they're doing making sense. It has nothing to do with propping it up against a desire for everyone to just clone WWE. I think that's cheapening what the critiques of AEW, the spirit of the critiques of AEW.
And I think for you, the most important thing in a wrestling promotion is that
is selling tickets and getting a crowd reaction
from a criticism point of view, as a fan, as someone who's been watching wrestling for 40 years, you value everything has to make complete and total sense. And if they don't, it's a demerit against them. And that's a valid point of view to have. That's your point of view. I would submit WWE lost millions of wrestling fans as they were, creatively spiraling during the second half of the 2010s. And AEW so far has been an experiment in a billionaire's son with a lot of money has decided he wants to do a wrestling promotion his way that he thinks will attract fans, and we're seeing the amount of fans that will get you. It will get you 800,000 to 900,000 on a good week for Dynamite. It'll get you 400,000 to 500,000 on Saturday night for Collision, which is just a poorly conceived night of the week to run a live wrestling show, and it'll get you 140,000 pay-per-view buys X number of times a year, and it'll get you anywhere from 1,500 to 5,000 fans, generally speaking, most weeks, in the building as currently constituted. So that's where we're at. The people who were turned off by WWE, you know, there's lots of people who watch both promotions. AEW, though, is for the people who were turned off by WWE, and so
I think that's a 4 or 5 year stale framing of things. I really do. The last time they had 900,000 was October 10th, by the way. And what I think the critiques of AEW, and you engage in them, except when you get sidetracked by this WWE framing, is that AEW has at sometimes executed Tony Khan's valid and compelling and potentially greatly successful vision well, and other times they executed poorly. And you've been as harsh a critic as anybody out there at times over the last year. So I think the critique isn't there's this other vision, and we should always judge it as if it's just another vision and it doesn't change, but rather there's a good way to execute it and a poor way to execute it. And I just don't think it's particularly controversial to say fans really want to cheer Brian Danielson and John Moxley and probably Claudio, but especially Moxley always and Danielson in his last run. And is it really helping business to have Moxley be part of a group that sort of tends to lean heel and to not just go all in and then to be teaming with Danielson, who's just because it's fun for him, wants to play heel and live out his little dream feuds. And if that's what it took to sign Danielson, it doesn't mean he's beyond criticism. He's not helping AEW as much as he could if he wasn't being self-indulgent in his little dream checklist or his bucket list for his last year. And that's fair criticism. That has nothing to do with what WWE did in 2016. That's saying, what can AEW do with the formula that Tony Khan has? That's his vision for what makes great wrestling. What can make it work? What can make it work for the most fans? And so, that's my fear, but I don't want to leave Jay out of this. Jay, you've heard Eric and I go back and forth. Chime in if you have any thoughts on any of this.
Absolutely. No, I mean, it's riveting conversation, guys. So I look at, my problem is, again, Daniel Bryan is my absolute favorite ever of all time, right? I say this a lot. He surpassed Randy Savage on my all-time favorites list. And to present him in a way that makes me not care, about seeing him, it's like, I was thinking earlier watching the show, I thought about, you have your, and you have to use WWE as an example, right? But you have Hulk Hogan or Stone Cold or even Cena, though half the crowd, rejected him for years. These guys, some of your biggest stars in the industry, were presented consistently. It wasn't, okay, well, tonight you're doing something that makes me want to cheer you. The next night you're doing something that makes me despise you. You could say that about any good television show. Like there's characters, there's heroes, there's villains, and their overall story arc, it has to remain consistent. And that's the point. And so my whole thing was there's just not that one guy. I mean, they have guys. I feel like if you were to take, say, like your Orange Cassidy and your Darby Allin, those guys they are beloved as they should be. And I hope that one day, Darby gets his chance in the main event and maybe to be a world champion. Thankfully, he's young. He's got some miles on him, or ahead of him, I should say. But he's someone that there aren't weeks where I'm like, ugh, he came across as just so dislikable. No, he's likable every time. I will say, Eric, it's funny that when you kind of threw the term out WWE brand, I'm like, really? But I defended AEW a little bit tonight, actually, because my wife came into the room during the main event, during the post-match with the Young Bucks beating down Sting and Darby. And she said, when Sting's sons were in the audience and they jumped in the ring or what have you, and they started getting beat up by the Young Bucks, she's like, oh, they're trying to be like the WWE. And I'm like, what are you talking about? She's like, well, they're having like the family. I'm like, that's not a WWE thing. That's just storytelling. I'm like, Sting,
exactly.
His sons were there to watch. They're there to celebrate this big moment with him. And now these bad guys are, I'm like, that is not strictly WWE storytelling. That's just storytelling. So it's funny that I had to like defend AEW to say like, no, that's just a good story to tell to make the Young Bucks great heels. So it's not just, trying to look at it from a WWE point of view, it's just the overall storytelling. And I've watched every Dynamite, and I will probably watch every Dynamite in the future. It's just, I mean, come on, give me, you know, Wade, I really wanted to call in Monday. I didn't get a chance, so I'm using this opportunity to say hashtag we want Cody. But give me a Cody in AEW. Give me someone that I can go, yes, can't wait to see them. Can't wait to see them win. And I'm talking about in the main event. Like, I love Samoa Joe. I love him being world champion right now. But he's not a baby face. He's not that good guy that I'm supposed to really be behind because he's doing everything right, you know. And he, I just, you know, yeah, that's where we are.
Yeah. I don't think that if you are anti-Target, that Walmart should have their checkout lanes at the back of the store, because if the checkout lanes are right near where you enter and leave, now you're being too much like Target, so, you know, we got to put them away in the back of the store where it's inconvenient. I mean, there's just things that make sense to do that everybody does, and frankly, all the checkout lanes have been near the front of stores, and every chain and every store for a reason. And that's what you're saying. With some of the things AEW does, they're not WWE-like. WWE just happen to be the dominant brand doing things, sometimes with characters you liked or didn't like, that resonated with you or didn't, but they did things that every territory that predated this era of WWE also did, and that's, it doesn't mean that's the only way to promote wrestling, but it is AEW's choice to largely promote wrestling like WWE. I mean, it's not like some UWFI pancreas reinvention. It's not Chikara. It is just a little bit more, you know, the argument is characters a little bit more grounded and having a little more layers and nuances. And I just think people want what AEW's mission statement is, a more sports-like environment with people who seem more real and relatable, to be well-told with a consistent, as you said, Jay, a consistent presentation that doesn't fight the headwind of how fans feel about the talent. A babyface is a wrestler who fans like, and the booking should lean into that or effectively change how fans feel about the wrestler, not just indiscriminately like bounce around in ways that seem contradictory or confounding, because there isn't an explanation for why they're acting different. And that's not, you know, an obsession with things making sense and being logical. That's just, like you said, Jay, that's how TV characters are written for a reason, and anything that's successful and not mocked and criticized. Eric, to you. Over to you.
Is two questions. Is Walmart the heel in your analogy? Because I feel like out of Walmart and Target, Walmart is definitely the heel based on my experiences.
It was a coin flip in my head. I mean, I have my favorite, but I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, we can use Kmart and Walmart if it
is. Are you saying that what AEW needs to succeed is more insects? Were they ants in Chikara? What was the thing? I didn't watch.
I'm saying AEW is more like WWE.
Yeah, I was making a joke about the Chikara ants, but
of course, yes. Well, okay, fair enough. I guess that I just didn't think the joke played off of what I said in a way that counts as funny. But each their own, Eric. Each their own. Anyway, Jay.
Now I know how Todd Martin feels every week.
I don't know if you do. Jay, anything else you want to add? Sorry, I just wondered.
Yeah, really quick. As far as that main event, Sting and Darby, so the Young Bucks. I guess I'm coming around to their presentation, and I will. Okay, so here we go. AEW is doing something that I am a fan of, and that's presenting the Young Bucks in a way that I can say, okay, I should boo them, because for the past 4 years they've been around now, maybe 5, going on 5, week to week, month to month, I didn't know how to feel about the Young Bucks. So now I know they're clearly heels. Good job, AEW. I don't know how much of a fan I am of the characters. I feel like they're trying. I don't know how well they're pulling it off. There's something about it that doesn't seem genuine. That still seems, I don't know if cosplay is the word, but it feels forced, and maybe it's just not natural to them to try to act. I don't know. So I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth, because I like the fact that they're giving them something more than they just come out and super kick, you know, but I don't know. I'm trying to get on board with it. I like that they're doing something with them. I'll say this and I'll go. again, yeah. My wife was watching that last segment, and she wasn't a fan of, she was like, is that real blood? That's not real blood. That segment with the blood on the white suits, in a way it worked to make them look more heelish, but I'm not sure that it really was necessary to just get the blood smeared everywhere in the way that they did, because it came across a bit more hokey, I think. And I was pretty convinced it was real blood and that he just bladed it or something, but she was just like, that is not real blood. Oh my God, it looks so fake. And so I don't know if that's how it appeared to anyone else, that it just looked a little bit corny to have the blood just smeared everywhere on the white. I thought it was a nice touch, but I bet they just kind of overdid it. So what do you guys think?
Yeah, Eric, what do you think about specifically? And then broaden it out to your take on the Young Bucks last week. We haven't talked since their characters were introduced.
So the main event was the most perfectly executed segment of the whole show, like the Sting legend winning his last tag team title shot with Darby, and then the Bucks coming out to get the super heat and the white suits and that was Darby's blood, right? Darby bleeds a lot, maybe second to Moxley in the company. So all of that I thought was great. What I didn't get was I had a little bit of whiplash from the Young Bucks for the first time that I can recall in AEW just being vicious heels with a pipe. And since their return the previous weeks, they've basically been walking around backstage. They've been shown in pre-tapes backstage with like a clipboard being smarmy pricks to the baby faces they would encounter. Usually people lower on them than them on the card, right? In the pecking order, like Dante and Darius Martin, Top Flight, was one example. And so they were being parodying, basically a lot of the criticism against them. But I would not have expected, based off the first 3 weeks of them coming back, that they would come out and do a hardcore ECW bleeding type angle. That to me was just, holy cow, what's this? So I'm interested to see how they follow up on that with the promo. Do they actually, like, if this were just about anybody else in wrestling, I would say what you would need to do to follow up on that is have Darby and Sting off TV next week selling the injury, and the Young Bucks to come out and start the show with a promo that explained their actions and explained why they did what they did and explained this hardcore turn that they did. But since the Young Bucks tend not to do live promos in AEW, I don't think we're going to get that.
Yeah. Do you like my criticism? And did they rename the BTE the EVP? Did I catch that on comment? Is that
they did? That was sort of shoehorned in after the fact by Excalibur.
I mean, I kind of like that, but I kind of like that if they're going to go with the EVP thing. But the EVP being the gimmick. How do you feel about the evolution of the character, Eric, and the presentation and the framing, and they're still sort of like the clubhouse snark? It started back when they were looking at the monitors at a sharp angle, and it's like, we're going to make fun of WWE. And it's like, at some point, you got to stop being the counterpoint to something that you got over on the internet making fun of 7 years ago and just be something that is present today, that makes sense today, that isn't based on something that got you over with a micro audience 7 years ago before you turned into international stars on national cable. And I think this leans into that. Now, the counter argument is this is kind of what they're good at. It's what's believable. It's true to who they are. And they're leaning into that, and give it some time. It can work. What do you think about this? Does it seem like an evolution or kind of falling back? And almost, as I said, it almost seems like this – you could look at that and go, this is just their spiteful way of making fun of people, saying that they should do what Jay is saying and like present themselves as more thought through, developed characters on a week to week TV show.
Well, I don't think we have enough evidence to know either way yet.
I agree. Yeah.
Tonight was the thing that was off brand for them, right? This was not what they're known for. They were known for the thing they've been doing the previous few weeks since they returned. And I got the sense that was them playing off of CM Punk's brawl out, meltdown where he says the Bucks couldn't manage a target. Right. And they were walking around backstage with a clipboard and trying to show they were being managers and EVPs. The problem for me with that is I've hated the whole EVP thing for almost the entire run of AEW because they never really, they, I could be wrong about this, but I'm not sure they ever really explained what the significance of Kenny, Cody, and the Young Bucks being EVPs were, right? I mean, did it mean they could book themselves in whatever matches they wanted any time, right? I don't think I know to this day. And so,
you're right.
Yeah, to me, it's always sort of a little bit cringy about it when they refer to it, you know, because I got the sense that after the infamous Dark Order end of December 2020 thing where Tony Khan says, all right, I'm taking the book for myself, and you guys can all contribute thoughts, but I'm going to write the TV every week. Since then, I didn't get the sense the EVPs really had any power, that it was more just symbolic in a way to put them on the payroll, to get them health insurance and all that, because they never explained the significance of it. It seemed more like a thing you would say to, you know, as important guys when you're starting this company. And that has not been the case, but more recently, I thought they were pretty clearly trying to issue passive aggressive receipts to CM Punk's and his promo, which
right.
That doesn't draw money. What draws money is beating down Sting and Darby Allin in a barbaric fashion, putting major heat and getting me to want to plunk down $50 for a pay-per-view on March 3rd.
They had the mustaches and they dropped them. So the mustaches were again, it plays into the idea of like the side angle of the monitors 5 years ago on Dynamite or paper, whatever it was when they first did that. So we're doing a heel character, but it's also meant to be wink, nod, Easter egg, making fun of Vince McMahon. And like, if it works on its own without that knowledge, then fine, do it. But it does come across like everything they do, they can't help themselves. It has to be something to get some snickers for, you know, have people kind of snicker and think, oh, look at that. And that kind of clubhouse snark. And now they don't have the mustaches because, oh, well, it's not something we should be like leaning into anymore. I just want them to be good characters on their own, regardless of what someone is going to say on social media or what they can do when they're sort of half in character, half out of character on a YouTube show. And Jay, I think that's what you're looking for too. From them. And so absolutely. Far, and I'm with Eric on this, I just think it's a small sample size, and I think it's a work in progress. And I am for them doing this, even if it's conceptually not my favorite thing and what I wouldn't have chosen, and off to a little bit of a rocky start because it leans a little bit too much into what I think their comfort zone is, and I want them to leave it a little bit and think about drawing money. And as Eric says, tonight was the more traditional heel beatdown, but is it believable? And I think the key is the follow-up, and that's something I want AEW to be, I don't want to say, well, maybe, yeah, just better at. I mean, there's more than one way to do it, but, like, that should be a really big deal on Collision on Saturday. It should be a really big deal what just happened at the end of Dynamite, next Wednesday on Dynamite. Like, it should be a talking point, and it shouldn't be something you talk about an hour, 15 minutes into the show, briefly or on commentary during another match. Like, that's a big angle. Really lean into it and make this something you weave into every show between now and the pay-per-view. Jay, back to you.
Absolutely. No, I totally agree with that. Again, I'm more on board with those guys tonight than I was the first night they did the sit down with Renee. I think that was the night they introduced their new characters. So I've been coming around. I thought they overdid it with the blood on the white suit. But again, the follow-up is definitely key. So I hope that.
Yeah.
I think AEW has gotten a little better recently with, you know, trying to show video packages and replays of things that happened, or even, you know, coming out of a pay-per-view, you know, showing the highlights of the pay-per-view. I still think they can do a little better at it. Like you said, make it a really big deal. And I even like Eric's point, like, we don't need Sting and Darby on TV next week. You know, like, we need to make this count, right? And I think that's going to be key to getting the Bucks over in this role. So, I said that was the last thing, and I lied. It's not. It's getting late, but let me just compliment Samoa Joe, and I'm hanging up. So, he really quick. So something that a lot of superstars do nowadays in any company or both major companies, there's a lot of this, I guess, like meta framing of their presentation, or like guys will talk about, you know, being pushed or you know. Oh, the company was behind you. Drew being the chosen one isn't necessarily a great example, but maybe it is. But Samoa Joe, in his very brief promo tonight, which he's like one of the best promos, right? He said something that yep. stuck out to me. He goes, you guys, you know, meaning AEW, like management or brass or whatever, he's like, you don't want me as champ, but it's not your choice. And I loved that line. It added to it made it feel all, it just made it real, right? It's like, okay, management may not want me to be the champion, but no, I'm actually getting into the ring and I'm winning the matches. So they don't have a say, as opposed to, you know, oh, for years, you know, I was like Edge and Christian on AEW recently. I think Adam Copeland made some comment about, they talk about Adam Copeland being the guy and Christian not being the guy or something. It's like, well, to who? Like, you know what I mean? We're not supposed to, as viewers, we're not supposed to believe that Roman Reigns is the champ because, you know, management wants him to be, you know, or MJF or whomever. So when Samoa Joe actually threw out that little line, it just made the hugest difference for him to say, like, hey, you guys don't want me as champion, but you don't have a choice. He made wrestling just as real as it could be right in that moment, meaning it's all about what I do in that ring. I'm getting in. I'm a, you know, I'm a badass. I'm beating my opponent. And if you don't like it, put somebody in there with me that can beat me. But it frames it in a way to say, like, I'm not just champion because, you know, Tony Khan thinks it's best. So that's it, Wade. You guys can have at it.
Cool. Thanks, Jay. Eric, you want to respond to that?
Well, I was distracted and I didn't hear a word Samoa Joe said because Renee was wearing, like, I don't know, like a Canadian tuxedo is a denim shirt, denim jeans, and denim jacket. She was wearing the female equivalent of that, and so it was so distracting. I didn't know if she was going to leave in the middle of the interview to milk a cow or something. No, seriously, I think, yes, Samoa Joe is completely believable as a badass character, whether he's shading face or shading heel. I can't shake the idea that he's just a transitional champion to get to the next thing. And that's not the worst thing in the world. There are plenty of worse people you could put that belt on. And I think they wanted to restore seriousness to that title after MJF spent the last 7 months of 2023 wrecking it, you know, more or less with his very uneven run at the top. So yeah, hey, you can never go wrong going with Samoa Joe.
Yeah, I loved after a time limit draw. His framing of it is they're celebrating mediocrity by sending them both after me because neither could win. I mean, it's such a great heel framing of it. Like two guys who fight it out for 30 minutes because neither guy won, although one was about to win. That defines him as mediocre. He frames it that way and then, you know, says, I'm going to walk out as champ and they're going to both suffer. He basically complains about the match, but then expresses supreme confidence. It won't matter anyway. He'll overcome and really good demeanor from him. All right. Let's shift to emails. More and more just keep coming in as we're talking. We'll speed through these. First up, it's not signed. So, Animesh says, hi, Wade and Eric. I tuned in AW Dynamite live in Bombay, India, around 7:30 a.m. to catch Tony Khan's big announcement. Clearly, the event will debut Mercedes Moné / Sasha Banks in AEW. The graphics on Big Business cleverly used Boston with $2 signs where the S goes in Boston. A few questions here. On a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being tiny and 5 being monumental, where would you rate the announcement of Big Business? Eric, 1 to 5.
I'll give it a gentleman's 4.
based
on what, you know, based on the Easter egg part. I mean, if he said, we're going to be in Boston on March 13th and Mercedes Moné is going to debut. I mean, I don't know that I could give that a 5 either, just because you've got Tony Khan, who's not like super comfortable in front of the camera doing it, but you know, at least it would be, you know, they chose the path they chose and the Easter egg path, I'd give it a 4 out of 5. The Boston thing could have been a little less subtle because I think a lot of people probably missed it. But again, that was the point. You can all it gives you something to like show your friends. Hey, look, you missed it on social media or on your text thread.
I will cheat a little, give it a 3.5, but agree with you, Eric. And I might have gone to 4 had she not appeared on AEW before. Because it would have felt like a little bit bigger deal. I think AEW loses some of the impact of when someone shows up by having them show up in meaningless situations or like, oh, let's create a buzz on the internet in the short term. And it kind of takes away from that first time ever moment that, that could be a bigger deal. Now, granted, it's a much bigger deal if she signed and she's in the ring and she's wrestling than just being shown in a luxury suite of the crowd or whatever. But still, it takes a little away. So that solidifies, that keeps me away from a four. Tony Khan's delivery doesn't matter much to me in this situation, though. If the news is big, he can be a little awkward. Number two, how would you assess the real-world impact of signing her to AEW? Does it truly unlock big business? No. But it has a chance to help them. She has a chance to be a top four star in that company. But I don't think she's going to be, like, worlds better than anyone else. Like, I think she could be a top star for them, and with the right opponents, the right storylines, the right collaboration. I think she can draw money, sell tickets, sell pay-per-view buys, but she's going to be a player in the mix, not somebody who rises just above everything. I don't think she, and like CM Punk had a chance to do that. And she is a notch below that. I think a real solid level below that for a variety of reasons, including that she just hasn't been away that long. But she was also never the star that CM Punk was. And she doesn't have the controversy surrounding her, although she certainly tried, to enter that zone the way she left, and has expressed herself since then. Eric, what do you think?
I agree with what you said. I guess AEW's hope would be she brings new fans in who haven't previously been watching AEW. You know, the people who were big on her in WWE and will follow her wherever she goes. Now, what evidence do we have that of what a difference maker she might or may not be? She was in a New Japan or Stardom for very long before she got hurt, and didn't wrestle that many matches even before she did get hurt. What evidence do we have? Did she increase subscriptions on New Japan World? We don't know because they don't disclose that kind of information, I don't think, at least not to that level of detail. And then New Japan had a card, I think, in January of 2023 in San Jose, and I think ticket sales weren't going that well before she was announced, and then they were all sold out. But it's, you know, like 1,000 tickets had been sold, and then she sold the remaining 1,100, right? So a very small amount of tickets and a small sample size. I think the as somebody who watched all of her New Japan and Stardom performances, I got a warning in AEW. We're going to find out. Her promos in Stardom and mm-hmm. New Japan were not great, and I wondered, was her ability to promo in WWE the result of the script that she was handed?
Her promos in WWE weren't good recently either. She was in La La Land. She wasn't making sense. She was – I mean, I didn't know what was going on with her the last dozen promos she did in WWE either. So, I mean, she's had some good promos, but she's never been a great promo. And, you know, but in AEW, maybe – being herself and giving her reps, she's going to find a groove and be a better promo than she ever was in WWE. But if the bar is what she did in WWE, I would hope for her to be a big star in AEW. She improves upon what she did in WWE. That shouldn't be the aspiration. That should be the starting point. But we got to see her be better than she was in her final appearances in WWE, which was not good.
Yeah, and
I don't know what she was. I don't know what she was going for.
In her New Japan and Stardom promos, they really didn't work too well, and so in AEW does tend to just say, I guess that maybe the best thing you'll get is go hit these 3 points. Maybe they gave you an outline. I'm just saying. It would behoove AEW to put maybe a little more structure if they're spending as many millions of dollars as I would imagine they're spending to bring her in, not coming cheap. Maybe she's coming from a world where she was produced a lot.
Yeah.
So maybe find the sweet spot in between, you know, if there's criticism that previously under Vince, WWE promos were overproduced, find the sweet spot between a ton of structure and zero structure so that she doesn't fail. And, when Saraya came in, right, that was a good example of mm-hmm. they didn't seem to help her, and she was billed as a medium/big signing, and she was a big nothing burger. Has been a big nothing burger during her run. So,
yeah. Number 3 out of 3. What else can AEW do to load the show to make it feel big business? I threw just some random things out there, Eric. But MJF returns. Kenny Omega checks in with us. A Sting retirement ceremony. Okada, obviously, showing up. What jumps out to you if they want to make that a big deal beyond, you know, just a regular big episode of Dynamite and above average episode in terms of matches?
I'd want to, knowing how Tony Khan books, I'd want to spread out the surprises if I were him. I think that's what he'll do. He won't have them both debut. Good matches tend to draw, right? I think they did announce Sting and Darby getting the tag title shot 2 or 3 weeks ago, right? Some point in January, and ticket sales improved, but I wouldn't say they shot through the roof in Arizona tonight in Phoenix. If if they had, they'd have been, 7,000-8,000, right? That would have been kind of a difference maker. So they'll be coming. It's hard to bill a bunch of matches ahead of time because of where that's falling on the calendar. It's March 13th, 10 days after the Revolution pay-per-view. And so the way they book, they often don't have they'll give you a few matches for Dynamite on the Wednesday on the Sunday pay-per-view, right? They'll announce them then because they haven't figured it out, or they don't want to get beyond themselves, or give away spoilers of the pay-per-view matches if they tell you what the matches are for the next Dynamite. So it's an awkward time, but you can never go wrong with, as you say, returns or putting on good matches people want to see that have a little bit of backstory that you can build on the post-Revolution Dynamite.
And he closes with, cheers and keep up the great work. The podcast certainly makes commutes go by faster than they are. Thank you, Adam. I appreciate it. All right, up next, we'll go to Chris in Toronto. What do you think about Hangman pitting Joe at Revolution and making Swerve chase until All In? Hangman can have a heel run with the title and dodge Swerve with the help of the Young Bucks by abusing their powers as EVPs. Basically, Swerve is Stone Cold and the leader, Mr. McMahon, with Swerve finally winning at Wembley and starting a long babyface title run. They put the belt on Tony Storm too soon, and they should let momentum build with Swerve and put obstacles in his path for the next 6 months. So, Eric, evaluate that both with Will Ospreay and with Will Ospreay not in the mix. Do you like that as a story, just conceptually, to link Hangman and the Bucks as a heel trio, lean into that and have Swerve be on the chase and not have him? Does he need to win the title to be validated and you got to strike while it's hot, or no, is it better to have a chase?
I mean, in wrestling, they do say that the money is in the chase, right? Or more money's in the chase. So I think
we don't have to agree with everything that they say. Not everything. Things that usually make sense don't always make sense.
They were wrong when it came to Lex Luger, right, in WWF at the time, that the money was not in that chase, which is why he won by countout at SummerSlam and never held the belt. I think Hangman pinning Samoa Joe and after taking Swerve out and Swerve chasing makes a lot of sense. And it's sort of the first thing where my gut went, because I was trying to figure out, okay, well, if they have Joe hold on to the belt because Hangman and Swerve, Hangman clotheslines, makes Swerve easy pickings for Samoa Joe, and Samoa Joe walks out of there with the belt, you're in the same exact place story-wise. It's Hangman and Swerve hating each other. It's just Swerve is a babyface and Hangman's the heel, right? Hangman succeeded. He couldn't beat Swerve ever, but he succeeded in preventing him from winning the world title. And where do you go with that? You get another match, three more months of feuding till the next pay-per-view or whatever. I'm not sure that's really satisfying, and that doesn't tend to be the way Tony Khan goes. So that doesn't seem likely. Do you just, and then the other option would be the opposite. Swerve takes out Hangman and pins Joe. Mm-hmm. You could do that. Winning the title like that in a three-way sets you up as on a little shakier foundation than if it was a one-on-one match, right?
Right. You're
trying to give a new champion momentum, a new babyface champion who's, unproven at that level. Certainly Swerve is very talented, but he's not been the top guy anywhere yet, hasn't been given the chance. And so, I guess just we'll see how the next few weeks unfold, but I think that's the way to go. Is my gut says Hangman wins and Swerve chases him and beats him for the title, and that yeah. and you'd have a situation where Hangman has never beaten Swerve, right? He'd be 0-3-1 against him directly
right.
in singles matches.
Yeah. Yep. No, I like that better, but it's not the only way to make it work. And you know, there's an argument just get over it. Let's build around Swerve. He's your guy, and just bring one heel after another after him, and don't risk him cooling off or fans feeling like this is Cody's story all over again. All right, up next, Shay in Brooklyn. Dynamite delivered on my expectations, and the crowd was great. Hope this doesn't go too long, but I really enjoyed the show. Paige and Swerve continued to have great chemistry. The feud started with Swerve telling Paige he's coming for a spot, and over the months and battles, he very much has done so. He's come up to a top guy level with Paige, and they continue delivering every time they get a chance. Paige's obsession with never letting Swerve become champ seems even bigger than his own goal of becoming champion again. He was willing to walk away from the match without a winner if it meant Swerve wouldn't be able to challenge for the title either. Going to be my first time seeing Paige as a heel, and I'm looking forward to it. BCC versus CMLL was a real treat. Not familiar with the guys at all, but AEW's way of telling stories in the ring that I've never really seen before. I like that they started the match highlighting each guy one by one and building the rising tension between the teams throughout the match. That's like a pretty standard six-man formula that we see, or eight-man match formula. Highlighting the style clashes as well. It felt like both teams wanted to prove a point, and so far I'm enjoying the invasion. I think Takeshita would have beaten Jericho without interference, but giving him the tap-out victory almost made up for it. I love that they pointed out that he now has beaten two former AEW World Champions. We'll ask for a rise soon, and I wonder how they'll feature him. I'm guessing he will break away from the Don Callis family by Revolution. The announcement was what many assumed. They are going the first dance route with Mercedes, putting a lot of hype into her debut is the way to go. Feels like a hot ticket. Perhaps we'll even get Okada that night as well. The main event was great. Pairing Darby and Sting together turned out to be an excellent idea. These two have had killer outings over and over again. The title win felt deserved. Young Bucks' choice of white suits gave us a real visual once it became Bloodstained. This is what the Young Bucks have needed, and I have no doubt that the pay-per-view match will be excellent. Ricky and Bell had worthy performances as well. Big Bell has impressed a bunch since joining AEW. He's gotten better with the stuff in between the moves. Overall, really fun show. 2024 has been a solid start for them. Eric, want to latch on to any of that and respond?
I didn't hear a question in that intelligent and well thought out email, counselor.
Yeah, but did it spark any thoughts?
It did not. I think we covered most of it, I think.
How about Takeshita Jericho? I'll just turn that into a question. Kind of clunky.
Well, this is gonna be too harsh. But do you remember in the late 80s, early 90s when WCW brought in Junkyard Dog to challenge Ric Flair, and Junkyard Dog couldn't move, and Ric Flair had to create all the movement in the match, and it resulted in the phrase Ric Flair could have a great match with a broomstick, but he couldn't with Junkyard Dog. This wasn't quite at that level, but Takeshita was creating all the movement in this match, and Jericho looked old and tired, and like he should maybe it's not the worst thing in the world that he should wrestle less and take over the Sting role, you know, legend who wrestles a few times a year. They did give Jericho that protection with the screwdriver shot, but you know, and of course Jericho then got out of the submission hold, and then Takeshita beat him with his own hold. So for the people who criticize Chris Jericho for being a heat vampire and you know, I think he put over both Hobbs and Takeshita about as strongly as and unselfishly as someone could of his stature.
All right, and we are running along, so I'll pluck a couple things out of the 9 points that JB from Detroit sent in to wrap up here. Between the crowd reactions tonight, Hangman's post-match promo, and Swerve telling Nan and the Mogul Embassy to stay out of the match, I'm thinking Swerve's face turn is going to happen sooner rather than later. Well, I think it kind of happened. Perhaps an official double turn with Hangman at Revolution, if that is the plan. This is a case of AEW doing a great job adapting to a storyline on the fly. The match was a perfect situation to use a time limit draw. If they were angling for a triple threat match, this was far more satisfying than an interference finish, and it makes a double turn possibility make much more sense in the process. This makes a few justifies a triple threat, in my opinion, although Joe becomes a third wheel, essentially, but it does provide an excuse to retain the title until Swerve eventually takes it away in a one-on-one match. And I think people are going to, like, go, at what moment did Swerve turn babyface? And I think it's fair to say there wasn't a singular moment, and there might not be. I just think different people are going to come to the realization at different times that Oh yeah, he's just a baby face now. But I would say him telling Nana the embassy to stay away, let him do his own thing, was a big moment. I think the psychology of wanting five more minutes and Hangman saying no. Another point, the totality of Prince Nana being likable, not obnoxious. Well, that's in the eye of the beholder, but not interfering on his behalf. You know, they're piecing it together. But the fact is it doesn't really matter at what moment it's official, Eric. It just matters that fans are cheering him and that AW booking and Swerve's demeanor and presentation gets with the program and they embrace it and they don't fight it. And they have stopped fighting it. And that has been happening for a little while.
You are correct that the face turn happened the last 2 weeks, last week's promo and this week. It also happened during the Continental Classic when he was getting cheered in almost all of his matches and sometimes even wrestling as a baby.
Exactly.
Face.
Yes, I know. Right.
And then we had a little interim period where he was back to being a heel after the Continental Classic. So these things happen.
He wants to know, where's the CMLL-BCC feud going? Could we get some kind of stadium stampede at Revolution with Team AW versus Team CMLL? And also, who are the faces and who are the heels? Can people just enjoy a fight, Eric?
I mean, that would be my view, you know. Did it work? Well, it was super heated. You just watched it. It was cool. It was over as hell live. The casual fans aren't going to get it. They're probably not going to be particularly interested in it. It's not for them. It's for Tony Khan's core audience and primarily, and it's also secondarily to give Bryan Danielson what he wants in the last year of his career. I think it's a way for them. I sure hope they're not still feuding in July, because if it's the same, you know, various combinations of six-mans and singles and tag matches from now until July, when they typically do the big War Games match that they do, that's going to get old for everybody. And I think it just feels like, you know, Rocky Romero's been wrestling in CMLL, and he's the great connector. Rocky being the true forbidden door in wrestling, that he's he's been working near the top of the card there and was effective last year. And so this is just a way for them to sort of dip their toes into a new partnership instead of AAA that was AEW's Lucha Libre partner, Mexican partner, and we'll see where it goes. I would not be unhappy if they did about what they've done so far, maybe a little bit more, and then they reversed it in the month of March and did a bunch of matches in CMLL where Blackpool Combat Club were the American heels, put over the Luchadors in their home promotion, and that would be fine and appropriate, and then you see where the partnership goes from there.
All right. He also says, even as a face, the crowd wants to see Sammy Guevara get his ass kicked by Powerhouse Hobbs. I don't think Sammy should ever have been anything other than a smarmy heel for at least several years. What do you think of Sammy? We haven't talked about him. His run-in after Hobbs dared to trip Jericho, Sammy's running out to defend his buddy.
Yeah, Sammy is the lost opportunity for AEW right out of all those young guys. He was in the four-way last year with Jack Perry and MJF and Darby. Yeah, the Pillars. And so that guy's just been turned face and heel so many times that he's the big show punchline at this point for AEW. And it's unfortunate because he has the offense of a babyface, but the natural charisma of a heel. And that's a hard position to be in. And his last turn wouldn't have even happened except, Kenny got so ill with the diverticulitis. And so sometimes careers get sacrificed with hotshot booking, and that, you know, he'd be Exhibit A in AEW of that.
There's actors who are really good at comedy. They're really good on SNL. But they've been cast in movies as like straight villains, straight up villains. Mm. And they don't tell jokes because that's not the role they're cast for. Sammy Guevara should have not been, and there should have been some leadership in AEW to say, you're a heel, stop doing everything you can do. There's going to be a time when you're a babyface, and you can do all your moves. By the way, this is what Seth Rollins got lectured with in NXT by veterans. Stop trying to get all your spots in. And that's what you said about Sammy's been an issue with Seth. Babyface style, heel persona. And that's been a struggle for him. And he's landed in a good spot now for a variety of reasons. It's still, you know, not everybody's, not for everybody. But with Sammy, he's really good at taking bumps. He's really good at being obnoxious, and he should not have he didn't need to show off all his great athletic high spots every match, and he'd be a much bigger star today. And it's a shame. This isn't about bad booking. It's about a lack of, well, it's about a lack of leadership for somebody who could have used some leadership to say, kid, you want to make some money? Let's tone down while you're a heel some of the stuff that's flashy. Unleash that when you turn babyface, but let's make some money with you as a heel. Be a bump machine. Be obnoxious. Lean into that and edit the other stuff out. The time will come. And he couldn't resist because people want to get star ratings. They want to get this is awesome chance. And his career is a mess because of it. And he is an example of someone more revealing themselves over time than being poorly handled due to bad booking. But like I said, some leadership would have some vision and leadership would have helped to edit him as a heel, and then he wouldn't have that problem.
The thing I will remember most about his AEW's career is when he hooked up with his wife, Tay Conti, on screen. They were all over each other, slobbering all over each other with PDAs, and they were shocked and being completely obnoxious, ruining yep. cars in the back, and they were shocked that they were getting booed, right? I mean, come on
yep.
now. No self-awareness. Yeah.
That's why I say Sammy revealed himself to be completely oblivious and tone deaf to what was likable and what was villainous and what undercut one or the other. And he constantly did things to undercut his popularity when he was a face, and he constantly did things to undercut heel heat when he was a heel. But hey, he's a good-looking athletic dude who has exciting matches, but that
who deserves
is not
the blame there though. That him or the adults in the room
the answer I just gave is there's a lot of blame to go around, and it's both. I mean, I'm not going to let Sammy off the hook for being a guy in his late 20s who doesn't understand the first thing about presenting a character on TV in a way that draws money, so he's not off the hook. But it's not the job of every wrestler who dedicates themselves to becoming as good at what Sammy Guevara is good at to understand how to present himself on TV. You need to have Tony Khan in leadership and support around him to steer him in that direction, and you have to management has to earn the respect of wrestlers. And part of the reason that the Blackpool Comic Club are feuding with CMLL is AEW lets wrestlers go off in their corner and do their own thing in their little pocket comfort zones. And that's been a problem for AEW because there's a lot of wrestlers who have clout, and Tony doesn't have enough leadership and respect among some of these guys, or he's had it and lost it, where he can say, I don't care if you don't want to do a job. I'm paying you. I don't care if you don't want to work with these wrestlers because they're not your favorite. They're not your friends. Go out and be a professional. WWE tells people that all the time. There's a few people who have clout and say, I don't want to face this guy and this guy, and they never do. And that does happen. But in AEW, it's like 80% of the top half of the roster have the little cluster of people they'll work with, and they boo-boo face and reject other things. And that's why we're getting a nonsense BCC CMLL feud, nonsense in the sense that it doesn't make sense to a lot of the people watching. So they are super serving, as you say, Eric, the core audience, and AEW, if they do a good job, can be a profitable company doing it, but there is a cap on it. If you don't actually develop the characters and tell a coherent story that doesn't involve being a historian who's online all the time. And again, it's not intentional as some, and I want to stress this because even the wrestlers involved in AEW will tell you this. It's not that we're reinventing the business and we deserve praise for what we're doing. It's just we can get away with doing what we want. And so we're just going to do what we want to get paid. So even they privately would tell you, oh, yeah, this isn't good stuff in helping AEW grow, but it's what we want to do, and we're getting paid anyway.
Exhibit A of why management it's management's problem and they need to govern the wrestlers better is Cody Rhodes. The guy didn't have an editor in – I think he even referred to that all of this week in an interview.
Yeah,
I probably needed someone to rein me in a little bit. And, you know, Cody in AEW gets booed for his last almost year there after his infamous I solved racism by having a baby with Brandy promo. Booed for the rest of the time there.
That's the gender reveal, yep.
Yeah, just unself-awareness, time to leave the territory. He goes to WWE. They capitalize on the momentum of a jump. They presumably collaborate with him on his promos and how he's presenting himself. Biggest star in wrestling. like people cannot get enough of the guy. Should have crowned him last year, didn't, and you know, eventually they will, and it doesn't seem like they're paying a price for any of this, and all because they took a guy with a lot of talent and made him an even bigger star, which is ultimately what you want out of your management of a wrestling company.
Got an email tonight. I don't know if I'll read it, but it's so tied into what you just said, from somebody who's followed WWE for a long time, but not lately. And he's like, what's this thing about Cody being a star? It's The Rock. Cody's nothing. It's like, okay, that, and you know, you've lost touch and you shouldn't be commenting on wrestling when you go away for 3 years and you don't have the humility to maybe catch up a little bit and understand what's happening before you criticize it. And that Cody has become a star for all the reasons you said. And in real time, it's completely understandable. But if you show up and don't, and I've talked to a couple wrestlers who are like, what, Cody, what? I'm like, how many hours of WWE have you watched the last 2 years? Oh, like here and there, 2 minutes here and there. Well, then stop being critical, because they're selling a lot of tickets. He's getting a bigger reaction than you ever got. I didn't quite put it that bluntly, but.
yeah.
I mean,
just
sometimes
look at the box
people,
office. Yeah.
Exactly. Sometimes people get over when you're not watching and you don't know why they're over, but that doesn't mean they're not or they shouldn't be. If you're over, you should be over, because you're over and something clicked. And if you didn't follow along, catch up or shut up. Or shut up, catch up, and then comment. All right. JB says, I wonder if he's listening now that I've really called him out. I really enjoyed tonight's episode, but one thing that continually annoys me with AEW is that almost every match feels like some variation of no DQ. Even the matches that we assume would be regular one-on-one matches can be described as lax rules, like we saw with Mox and Jeff Hardy last week. It particularly bothered me tonight with the tables in the Swerve Hangman match. Poor structure equals less heat. Well, yes, that would be my t-shirt. Poor structure, less heat. And by the way, learn how to lock those legs on a table. we'll deliberately do that. I mean, that's not optional. They're there for a reason.
Yep.
Normally it's just to keep, like, you know, chips from falling off a table when there's a wind gust. But if you're going to put a human body on it, it's even more important. All right, finally, by the way, do you agree with that, Eric? Like that AEW just, you know, the wrestlers kind of do what they want, and sometimes there's an official explanation of lack of rules, and other times there isn't, and they'd be better off having fighting within the structure a little bit more?
So in New Japan, they get away with bloody murder outside the ring, and the stated reason is because the referee only considers his job to be inside the ring, which is preposterous, I think. But it is. They have explained it, at least.
Yeah.
I didn't necessarily have a problem. They've been getting tables out in wrestling matches for years when it wasn't a tables, ladders, and chairs match or a tables match. If you're going to say that about the main event, I think Sting can't really do a traditional.
Oh, it's a Texas Tornado no rules match. They described it as such.
Yeah, but they had to do that on purpose, because I don't know that 64-year-old, 65-year-old Sting is capable of doing a full, you know, 20-minute main event match as a traditional tag, unless it's just Darby in the hallway and Sting gets the hot tag. I mean, Sting needs the shortcuts of the walk-in brawl. I think the emailer said
he's been doing walk-in brawls for 18 years. It's crazy. Like, that's been the second half of his career. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think the emailer's point, I thought it was that, you know, AEW does too much of those matches. Well, you could make the argument that you save that, you know, say if that's in the main event, everybody else should work in service to that main event and not pull out all the stops. But that's never been what AEW has been about.
I think that's a separate topic, and it's a pertinent one and worthy of discussion. I just think the idea is, if you want it to feel like a wild match because you said it's Texas Tornado and no rules, it has more, it means more if the previous matches that didn't have special stipulations had competent referees enforcing the structure and the rules, then it feels special when you give official permission to the wrestlers to not do it. But it becomes kind of a farce if you say in a Young Bucks match, oh, this is Texas Tornado, tags aren't necessary. And you're like, well, every Young Bucks match is tags not necessary, and there's no five count to get out of the ring. So it just becomes kind of farcical. It's like, what are you trying to sell us? There's nothing different about this other than you're just saying it ahead of time, and instead of just doing it regardless of not saying it at time. But
yeah, I mean, if you're going to have steps in a match, certainly set them up ahead of time. That's a selling point, right?
Maybe this isn't what you're saying, but if you're going to have steps in a match, make sure all the other matches that didn't have that step weren't fought the same way.
Yeah, that's, you know, I mean, in WWE cards in the 80s, I mean, maybe even till today, if you're in the opening match, they tell you not to go out and do a bunch of flippy-doos.
No,
and show
no, that,
up, show
but
up the main event guys.
I'm trying to differentiate between that. I'm not – I agree with you, but that's a separate discussion. My point is, if you're going to have lax rules officially late in the show, don't have a match that has lack – where the wrestlers aren't following the rules, but the referee has to act oblivious or hapless, even if the rules of the match are standard, and he should be enforcing them.
Well, in what way did Page and Swerve do that tonight? The table spot?
Well, that's what JB's pointing out. But I'm saying philosophically, there's two separate things. That, like you said, the undercard should work in service of the main event. If you're gonna do a low blow in the main event, don't do two low blows earlier in the show.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing. And if a wrestler is gonna win with a lion tamer in the main event, don't have that be a transition move that somebody like powers out of earlier, in a way that makes the move look weak. I mean, there's probably better examples of moves. But
yes,
AEW
was guilty of literally probably everything you just said during its five-year, four-year history, right?
And maybe tonight also. if Jake Roberts' DDT is going to be the finish of the main event, don't use the DDT as a transitional move in three other matches earlier where someone – you don't even go for a pin afterwards or it's a kickout. Like – there should be things that are saved so that they have meaning, because wrestling gets to define what hurts and what doesn't. Don't define something early in the show as not hurting if later it's going to be the be-all, end-all. Same thing with rules. If you want people to get excited about a no rules match, make sure that there aren't matches earlier in the show that have rules that aren't enforced and the style is indistinguishable from the main event that officially has no rules. And that's what JB's getting at.
Yeah, and I understand that, and I agree with what you said, and it all makes logical sense. I just don't think Page and Swerve necessarily did that.
Oh, yeah, and I'm kind of with you on that. Okay, finally, the image of the Bucks standing tall, painted head to toe in crimson from Darby's blood was a powerful way to end the show. The Bucks could really be good heels if they keep this up. All right, I read most of what JB wrote in. I don't want to be redundant on the other things. Eric, anything else you want to bring up from Dynamite tonight? We kind of... let, other than the A topic for us at the start in the A block, as they say, we let callers and emailers lead the way. But is there anything we didn't cover that you got notes on or want to get in before we sign off?
We covered it all.
Did we? I think we did. Been fun. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, callers. I believe Travis Bryant's joining me Friday after SmackDown. If you haven't yet, check out Jason Paul and the flagship from yesterday. Check out pwtorch.com for the latest news, including articles you won't find anywhere else, like Zach Barber's AEW feud tracker. We always are covering TV ratings. We got some cool flashbacks to 5, 10, and 15 and 20 years ago, and our hits and misses columns, rocket straps, looking at key metrics to rank the top 10 wrestlers prioritized by WWE each week, Jeff Rush's weekly column. Lots of cool stuff over at pwtorch.com. Check it out, and we thank you all for your support and for listening, and we'll talk to you all next time.